Members, we do have a quorum, and I'm going to call the committee to order. Do we have minutes by any chance? We do. So, Representative Erickson, would you be kind enough to move the minutes of March 12th?
Mr. Chair, I move
the minutes. I'd be happy to, Mr. Chair.
Oh, we have two Erickson's.
It's the S and the R today.
Oh, excuse me. I was mistaken as to which Erickson you were referring to.
Mr. Chair, it could read that we jointly agreed.
Representatives Erickson move the March 12 minutes discussion. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Members, I hate using the word fluid, but I think we're kind of in a fluid situation.
Tim Pawlenty.
Yes, he introduced that vernacular to the legislature a decade ago. Members, what we're going to do is we're going to do a quick recess. As you recall, the amendments we had asked, and thank you all for getting your amendments into the reviser and or House research by 6. That really helped the staff out quite a bit. But obviously what it also meant is that we haven't all had a chance to look at, obviously we'll look at the minutes together, as or rather the amendments as we go through committee, but I want to give an opportunity for the respective caucuses to do a quick run through of the amendments, and then we'll come back and we'll start the work, and we'll see about this evening. As you know, the fluidity has to do with the fact that we've been called into floor session, and don't ask me my opinion on that because I might get in trouble on the record for the kind of words I'll use for that kind of decision. But so, members, why don't we do this? Let's do a research or let's do a recess till 20 minutes should do it. For let's do a recess till 10:30. We'll come back and we'll pick it up from there. We'll get as far as we can this morning. So the committee stands in recess until 10:30. Members, we'll get started. Representative Kreisha, it worked out perfectly. If I had said 30 minutes, we'd be back here at 11. So
we were on time.
Let it be noted the GOP caucus was the first one here, and they were on time. Members.
I told them it could be late.
Iron fist.
School teacher.
All right, members.
Isaacson, that's all I want to
know. Actually, it was, yes.
Members, the chair moves House File 1151. We'll take that off the table. House File 1151 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on K-12 Finance. And then, members, the author, I will offer the DE3 amendment. Discussion in the DE3 amendment. If not, all in favor of amending the bill with the DE3 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The bill is before us in the shape the author wishes it to be, and we'll start our work on our amendments. Members, the chair will pull up the A3 amendment. Members, the A3 amendment is the bill that Representative Moran offered. When was it? All the days are running together for me. And I believe it was House File 998.
Yes.
This bill had to do with accountability measures for charter schools. And members, if you recall, the issue had to do with reference to the MMR as one of the determining factors for assessing or for rather triggering a process by which a authorizer can move to close a school and then submit a plan or a report to the commissioner on why they didn't close the school, and also a plan for remedying the issues before them. If I remember correctly, the committee was terribly concerned over the reference to, well, among other things, the reference to the MMR waiver that exists in NCLB, and so the bill is now shaped to do a much more generic reference to federal school accountability measures. Members, discussion? If no discussion, nope. Then Representative Isaacson.
I will restate my lack of support for this amendment, and I do not want to see it go through. I don't think it's the right way to solve some of the problems we're talking about, and I think this needs to be revisited, redrafted. I do agree with my counterparts in the GOP and some of the folks about we need to take a better look at how we're assessing some of these schools to make sure that we have the right tools in place. This bill does not do that. This amendment does not do that.
Thank you, Representative Isaacson. We do have the department here that wishes to comment on the amendment. Mr. Cordy.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to testify on this amendment. We do appreciate the changes that were made to what would be starting at line point 1.4. We're okay with that part of the bill. Where we had some concern was the idea that that we're setting aside kind of two different groups here of charter schools that were that would be applicable to this. You know, there's a set that's generally applicable, and then there's the, if you have 70% or more of your students in graduation incentives, then this wouldn't be applicable to you. We just think that generally this, if we're going to do this, it should apply to all charter schools. We don't think that setting one set of standards for one set of schools and another for another set of schools is a good policy road to go down. And we understand that there are significant challenges to serving these types of populations, but that we shouldn't be setting different standards for those schools than we should be for all the other schools. And as in regards to Representative Isaacson's comments about what we're doing to focus our efforts on achievement in those populations, I have our charter director here, Ms. Murphy, who would be able to speak to what we're doing in the federal CSP grant quickly to address that.
Welcome to the committee.
Representative Chair, committee members, my name is Cindy Murphy, and I'm the Charter Center Director at the Minnesota Department of Education. As Mr. Corte mentioned, we definitely see the need to look at schools comprehensively, and that our current standards, largely based on test scores to determine proficiency and growth, as well as graduation rates, while they provide us with very critical data points, they're not necessarily a comprehensive look at a school's overall performance. And so while we do appreciate the intent of this bill to really shine a spotlight on schools that are chronically and consistently not performing well, it's the part about exempting schools that either limit admission or largely enroll students that qualify for the graduation incentives program. If you look at that specific provision in statute, there are many students that would be exempted, including students that perform substantially below the performance level for pupils in the same age based on a standard measure. And so we don't have clear data. We don't have a list of charter schools that limit admissions to graduation incentives or have large percentages. But we know that a lot of our charter's mission is to reach out and improve the success and the performance of those children. And so we question, if we set an accountability standard, why would we want to exempt potentially a large pool of our charters from that accountability measure? As Mr. Corte mentioned, we've been very fortunate to receive a federal grant, the Federal Charter School Program grant, and under that five-year project, the department will be working with our stakeholders, charter directors, authorizers, community resource organizations to look at expanding our existing accountability system to have a more comprehensive performance framework that we'll use for the federal grant to define high-quality charter school. And so we would offer that we work with our partners in that regard, and we take some time to really get this right and make sure that as we do clarify accountability standards, that it's really serving the best interests of our children and students.
Very well. Thank you, Ms. Murphy. Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would be happy to work with my friends on the side of the Alessandra, or Representative Erickson, I'm sorry, or anybody else that would want to sit down and really dig into this and do this the right way. I think that, you know, working with the Department of Education and making sure that we do apply those standards all the way across the board would be excellent. And so if that's something that we wanted to get to work on, I would be ready to roll up my sleeves and help out any way I can. But I don't think I can support this amendment the way it is right now.
Thank you. Representative Falls.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really, really like this bill. But I missed your name. I'm sorry, madam.
Ms. Murphy.
Yes, but you made a fantastic point. And I remember hearing time and time again my superintendent saying that one test is just one of many, many measures we do to evaluate how we're doing. And so I think that you're right, and Representative Isaacson is right, that although I love this, I don't think it's quite ready for prime time. So even though my cheat sheet says that I was going to vote yes, I'm going to change that. and you see, I do listen.
Representative Foss, it's good to know you have a cheat sheet over there. further discussion? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate the comments by the department. However, this is permissive language, and I think it's a good starting point for us, even if we decide to modify the language later, that this puts on notice that we have a high, high expectation and that we are going to be committed to that. And this is in the charter area, but I hope that we can look at it, you know, across the board. But this is permissive, and I think because it's permissive, we're laying a foundation for the highest achievement possible, regardless of what path we take for testing or for that achievement measure. And though we have those exceptions, we're going to have those anyway. Because as a legislature, we've always looked upon the graduation incentives program differently, and we've looked upon special education students in a different light when it comes to the achievement measurement. And I think that this is a good direction for which we will move, and I will be supporting it.
Thank you. Mr. Sweeney has joined us. We don't want to go over all the testimony. That's just a message for anyone else in the audience that we've had before, but we certainly would avail ourselves of your advice here as we get ready to vote on this amendment. Mr. Sweeney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Brian Sweeney with Charter School Partners. I'd like to echo what Representative Erickson said, that this is a permissive language. There's no requirement to close down a school. It is a flagging of schools that are in deep trouble. Again, 25 percentile, the lowest performing schools in the state for three consecutive years is a very low bar. And secondly, I like to, we work very closely with these two to my right and on a number of issues, but like to respectfully disagree about identifying credit recovery and special needs students. It is something that there is no technical ALC definition for charters like there is for districts. So we feel the three criteria that we outlined is broad enough to cover those schools, like high school for the recording arts, to be exempted from this bill. So,
thank you, Mr. Sweeney. I think Representative Bly had a question, or a question or comment, and then members would like us to get to a vote. Representative Bly.
Just to the exemption, which I do support the exemption, although I don't support the amendment, it's because we need the exemption because for both those students and the program, it's the wrong measure.
All right. Mr. Cordick.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to point out that in the effective date, there is still a reference to multiple measurements, ratings, and focus ratings. I don't know if that was intentional or not. But.
All right.
Technical change. That's okay.
Thank you for pointing that out, Mr. Cordick. Members, we're ready to vote. All in favor of the A3 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion does not prevail.
Division.
Division being called for. All in favor of the A3 amendment, please raise your hand. All opposed to the A3 amendment, please raise your hand. All right, on a vote of 8 ayes and 10 noes, the amendment does not prevail. Members, the A4 amendment, Representative Dabney.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, which amendment is this?
A4.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members should recognize this. This is regarding the standard adult diploma development. We passed the permission, or in the bill is the permission for the commissioner to establish this, but what we need is a task force of smart people around the table to assist her in that. The bill already has been to GovOps and passed from there intact. This just adds the second half to the first half that's already in the bill, and I'd appreciate support.
And Representative Dabney, thank you for making sure that your bill met the GovOps requirement. You'll see, members, a few provisions that are not provided in the D3 amendment, largely because of the chair's concern that our bill would be hijacked by GovOps unless those provisions have been properly vetted there. Representative Erickson, Roger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to point out that I think we've had our first bipartisan vote disagreement, so I just wanted to point that out. So.
Representative Erickson, Roger, it's a sign of a good committee. Representative Sawatsky.
Mr. Chair, would the author be on line 1.14 offer a friendly change to 5 administrators and 5 adult basic education teachers instead of instructional experts?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, I think I want to phone a friend here because I do think we want a variety. My instinct is we want a variety of ABE people around the table. We want the instructors, but we also want administrators and others in those multiple perspectives.
You're not saying no to the administrators. Just the last part of instruction.
Representative Watson. And if Representative Dabney has a friend, I would ask the friend to come forward.
Administrators and instructors.
Ms. Dabney.
Right. Point of information, there's a misunderstanding.
Oh, yeah. Okay, Representative Isaac.
And I want to make sure I get this right. Representative Sawatsky wasn't saying replace the 5 administrators and instructional experts. She just wants to replace the word instructional experts to say ABE teachers. 5 ABE teachers. No, because he doesn't want to.
All right, hold on. Representative Sawatsky, why don't we work on...
Mr. Chair, may I ask for my friend?
Mr. Chair,
Representative Dabney.
How about if I withdraw this amendment at this time, Representative Sawatsky, others, and I can work on it and bring it back later.
Very well. Representative Dabney withdraws the A4 amendment. So the next amendment is the A7 amendment.
We're going to do ours after you do yours.
We're doing the A7 amendment.
We want to see the bill before we do ours.
Is anyone offering the A7 amendment? Then the chair will offer. Oh, Representative Isaacson. Representative Isaacson offers the A7 amendment. This is Representative Winkler bill having to do with the epinephrine auto-injectors. My understanding is there's no change being proposed to his bill. This committee acted on the bill. The bill has actually been quite successful and I believe is headed to the floor after making a couple stops. The desire here would be to make sure we have a placeholder in case something funny happens in the floor where the A7 bill doesn't wind up being heard. I believe that's
that is correct.
Of it, Representative Isaacson?
Yes, sir.
All right. Discussion? If not, all in favor of the A7 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Very well. We now have the A8 amendment, Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Henry Ford did not set out to make a stronger or faster horse. He redesigned travel. Thomas Edison didn't set out to improve upon the candle. He redesigned light. And General Patton once said that don't tell people how to do something. Tell them what you want done, and their ingenuity will amaze you. And that's really the context of this bill. This builds on really the redesign efforts that have been previously put into law. There have been efforts, I think, Representative Erickson, you had the innovation zone, I think, that you proposed. And this builds upon the site decision making that was passed back in 2009 by, was authored by Representative Benson. And then there was some individual learning added onto it last year. So, members, what this does, it creates what are called learning redesign sites. And the intent right now is, there's wonderful things going on in education, but we also need laboratories of redesign, of experimentation, where people go outside the box. And so what this would do is set up agreements that you already have, but it would be an agreement between school boards and these learning redesign sites, which can be a site, a program, a grade level, and expanding folks' roles in these to allow for experimentation and redesign. And so one thing I think education has always lacked, and I think Representative Benson, Representative Erickson has really promoted, is we need a research and design kind of area in education. So you have the traditional education that is going on, and then you need these incubations of redesign. And so Mr. Ted Coldry, who has worked a lot on this, isn't here, and he's not going to be able to make it here this morning. But you know, we could hear his testimony later tonight, or I'd ask members to support this now. But we could certainly do that tonight also. But that's the gist of this bill: really promoting, encouraging more reinvention, more redesign into the education system.
Representative Marquardt, it sounds like a good, intriguing bill. Members, however, we have not heard this bill, and I want to make sure that we're fully informed when we cast our votes. And so perhaps, Representative Marquardt, I know Mr. Coldry is not with us today. Maybe we should pull this back and then offer it back when he's available so we can have a fuller discussion. Does that make sense to members?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mr. Chair, that would be great. Yeah?
Okay.
Thank you.
Let's do that. So, Representative Marquardt. Representative Rudolph.
I'm just wondering about the monetary part of the bill. You know, I see it's, if you could address that a little
Representative
bit.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, Representative Rudolph. To try to improve kind of on what we've had, there's really been no grants or any money available. There has to be some sort of funding, and that is left blank right now. And, of course, if this could go on the Finance Committee, we're looking at potentially setting aside some grants. Dollars to allow some of this to happen, if they need some sort of thing, feeder money to get things started. So there's nothing in there right now as far as dollars.
And Representative Marquardt, you have a pretty good relationship with the chair of the Finance Committee, so I suspect that'll be a fruitful conversation.
We have fruitful conversations all the time.
All the way home.
Don't lose arguments.
Yeah, so. But I would pull this back or whatever the correct formal motion would be and have
Thank
this
you.
Here tonight.
Thank you, Representative. My withdrawals the A8 amendment and we'll for further consideration later. Representative Dabney, should we circle back or are we still working on that?
You ever tried to fly into O'Hare, Mr. Chair?
Yes, I understand.
You do that for a while?
I understand.
And then you land. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very well. A12 amendment, Representative Bly.
The A12 amendment is was a bill brought by NAMI that asks us to look at encouraging schools to have mental illness or mental health curriculum, and it's various studies and other. Actually, there's a group in South High called the Silver Ribbon Campaign that has learned through their experimentation that when students are engaged to talk about mental health and mental illness, it's easier for them to self-select and actually get some help. And there is also a program in Portland, Oregon called PEER that encouraged the same thing. I just think this is a very good idea for us to challenge schools to look at if we want to help students feel more comfortable about talking about mental illness and being able to seek help and be encouraged to do that, that this would be a good step in that direction.
Representative Bly moves adoption of the A12 amendment. And Representative Bly, I think the major change from the bill as introduced is changing a must to permissive language in terms of the mental health curriculum development. Members, we have not heard this bill, and so I think it's appropriate for us to get some more information and, on the bill. And so with that, we have Ms. Adler-Holden here to share her insights and advice relative to the 355 bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Sue Adler-Holden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota. I will say that mental health is already included in the National Health Education Standards and in Minnesota, but when you go through the full document, there are only three examples of activities that you could carry out to learn more about mental illness, which I would say is not enough. There was really an absence of enough ideas. It is important to make sure that students are being taught this the right way, particularly in suicide. There's a wrong way and a right way to educate students about that, which is why we wanted to include in there that something's age appropriate, that it's based on research. The Department of Human Services has already said they'll help pull together. You know, there's not that many curricula that's out there. One of them is from the National Institute of Mental Health. I would have brought it with, but my bag was already pretty heavy. Free, downloadable, you know, you can pull the ideas out there. So again, this is just encouraging them. We do know that at South High, for example, they have not had suicide in many years because students are really feeling okay about talking about the issues and seeking out help when they need it. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Members, please, are there questions for Ms. Adler-Holden? Representative Breiner and then Representative Erickson Sandra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I have a comment, and I had it before Ms. Adler-Holden, but I just wanted to echo support for this bill on the basis of our former colleague Andy Welty, who carried a similar bill for some years based on some experience of a student in the Rochester district who thought it was really important to do things in the curriculum to enhance discussions around mental health issues so that there would be more openness and acceptance. So.
Thank you, Representative Breiner, and you reminded me we had some pretty powerful testimony and hearings from young people when we considered that bill several years ago. Representative Sandra Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and our GOP caucus to support this. I would just like to note that we have well over 100 encouragements now in statute.
Is there anyone that wishes to testify on the A12 amendment in the audience? Very well. Thank you, Ms. Adler-Holden. If not, then all in favor of the A12 amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Bly. I'm going to jump ahead to A18, Representative Roger Erickson. Representative Erickson moves the A18 amendment. Representative Erickson.
The 18 amendment goes to page 35, deletes section 1, and it returns to the after Labor Day start. The old snake oil after Labor Day start bill.
All right, members, discussion. All right, we had an extensive hearing on this, so I think we're probably fully informed and ready to vote. All in favor of the A18 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Chair is in doubt.
Division. Division.
All in favor of the A18 amendment, please raise your hand.
Yeah, I like flexibility.
Raise your hands high so our staff can see them. All opposed, please raise your hand. What do you have?
10.
You have 9-9? Nine. All right, let's do that again, members. okay. This is called Walk the Plank. All in favor of the A18 amendment, please raise your hand. Hold them up high so that folks can see them.
Only one hand.
Only one hand, yes. All right. Thank you, Representative Marquardt.
It's new math.
You have 9? Okay, all opposed, please raise your hand. Getting our exercise in this morning. What do you have? 10? All right, on a vote of 9 ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail.
What? Recount. Oh, we did that.
Representative Erdo, I suspect we'll have many more votes on this issue before this session is up. okay, Representative Foss, the A14 amendment. Representative Foss moves the A14 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of my testifiers is not here, and
we can hold off. That's fine.
Yeah, so if we can wait with this one, that'd be great.
Very well.
We told her 9 o'clock tomorrow morning would probably be the right time, but if we're here at 9 o'clock tonight and we're about done, we'll punt the best we can. But
Representative Foss, we were actually at a good pace to finish this morning, so we may come back to the A14 amendment. So Representative Foss withdraws the A14 amendment for now. Representative Bly, the A23 amendment.
Okay.
Representative Bly moves adoption of the A23 amendment.
Yes, this so the thank you, Chair. I would like to move the A23 amendment. And this is an amendment which we didn't have a chance to hear, but I made mention of it in my testimony for the bill I did present. This is a charter school bill which enables programs with 70% of enrolled pupils who are eligible for the graduation sentence program allows those schools to evaluate those students with multiple measures, and then it describes what some of those multiple measures would be. I think it's an important bill to consider. As I mentioned earlier, a lot of these students and programs have been measured by what I think is the a sole measurement which is inappropriate or doesn't really reflect the achievement and the success that they've been having in those schools and the good effort that those schools make. If people have questions for me, I'd be happy to take questions since this was not heard before.
So, members, this is House File 1108, which was not heard. Are there questions for Representative Bly or comments? Representative Verritsen, Sandra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, but I thought we should hear from the department on this. I don't have an issue with it, but I think we need to hear. And if you're going to withdraw it and hold it over, maybe that's good. But we do need to hear from the department, and I would hope from the charter school representatives who may be in the audience.
Very well. Mr. Cordy, welcome back.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the opportunity to testify on this amendment. Representative Erickson had indicated, we do have some concerns with this bill. I'm not going to reiterate all of our testimony from the A3 amendment, but it's in a similar vein that we just don't think that necessarily having different expectations for different schools is necessarily the right route to go down. We do understand, as I said, the concern about having other ways to measure these students and evaluate success for these students with ways other than test scores. But that being said, we feel like we're addressing that through the Charter School Programs Grant, and that's the better way of approaching this situation. We do have Ms. Murphy, if you wanted more questions about that.
Very well. It sounds like similar testimony that we heard earlier, I suspect, Ms. Murphy. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, you are correct.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the charter school community that wishes to comment on the bill? All right. Are there further discussions or questions from members?
I would just say that I bring this issue forward because I think it does deserve further discussion, and I would be happy to meet with the department and have representatives from the charter schools who brought me this bill meet with the department to talk about our concerns and why we think it's important to have different measurements for these programs and for these students. We have many, many years of experience in this area and have a lot to share about it, and I think that we can inform the department on how we should proceed. And with that, if we can hopefully have greater discussion, I would withdraw this amendment.
Very well. From the department, you heard the request on the part of Representative Blythe. I would hope that the department will then, in fact, entertain those conversations with him and others.
Absolutely, Mr. Chair, and I apologize to Representative Blythe for not bringing these concerns to him earlier, but, as you know, the amendment got posted this morning, so we'll definitely be in touch.
Thank you, Mr. Cordy. Representative Blythe withdraws the A23 amendment. Representative
Mr. Chair?
Blythe,
oh, I'm sorry.
Representative Blythe has the A27 amendment. Representative Blythe moves adoption of the A27 amendment. Representative Blythe.
Thank you, Chair. Part of the bill that I presented, the 685 bill that members of the committee heard already, is included in the delete all amendment. However, some of it was not, and part of the reason for its not inclusion was because we had not taken the government ops path and had not and don't want to send the chair's bill onto a path that may be distracting it, and so we changed the language there so that what we're asking for is not that a group be formed, but that the commissioner be instructed to have to gain information and insight from experts and people who have worked in this field to have that conversation about why we need multiple measures for and multiple pathways for these students.
Very well. Representative Blythe, I'm informed by counsel that we need a technical correction to your amendment, so I'm going to ask Ms. Larson to read that for us and explain it.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. On page 1, line 18, delete group and insert commissioner. On the H1151A27 amendment, page 1, line 18, delete group and insert commissioner.
Members, are we clear? Representative Blythe, I will incorporate that into your amendment.
Thank you.
All right, very well. Discussion on the A27 amendment. Representative Brenner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Blythe, we have had some of this discussion already, and what I would say broadly is I do think the approach to assessment that we passed out of this committee last Friday, and especially the task force focused on career pathways and technical education, does have quite a bit of overlap with what you're doing, which doesn't mean that I oppose what you're doing. I do think that what might be done in that task force almost overlaps with your goals in this conversation. I wouldn't say, again, that I oppose it, but I hope that we'll figure out how to get these aligned, because I think they're working for the common goal of a multiple, approach to assessment measures that is geared toward the unique aspects of each student's learning goals and aspirations. So I think they're very similar in intention.
Representative Blatt.
Thank you, Representative Brainerd, and of course I look forward to a good conversation about that. I think that the fact that this comes from a different perspective, different experience, that it's still important to make sure we don't lose sight of the issues that we would bring to the table, and I think that it would be a very enlightening discussion for both of us to have, hopefully this won't be lost in the discussion. That's my concern, that one issue, for instance, for us is that the schools that I am talking about, the programs I'm talking about, came into existence because our regular system, our traditional system, was not able to offer what these students needed. And although what you're talking about is a change in the assessments, I'm not 100% confident that that change will mean that those students who were in the past lost on the way to success and achievement might not still be lost. And therefore, we need to have a discussion about how do we deal with that? How do we make sure that we are lifting all students up so that they can have achievement and be recognized for the achievement and the success that they are having in school?
Representative Bly, I'm told that you actually need two technical corrections to your amendment. Ms. Larson found another place where the word group of should not be used. Ms. Larson, if you can explain.
Mr. Chairman, members, on the H1151A27 amendment, in addition to line 18, on line 24, delete group and insert commissioner, please.
Representative Bly, why don't you incorporate then the word commissioner on both? Ms. Larson, I just want to make sure we get this right in the record. Can you incorporate, state the two changes?
Mr. Chairman, members, on the H1151A27 amendment, page 1, line 18, delete group and insert commissioner, and on page 1, line 24, delete group and insert commissioner.
Representative Bly, you would incorporate that into your amendment?
Yes.
Members, are we clear?
These changes reflect the changes that I wanted to make, and I appreciate Ms. Larson's work. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I don't want to go over all my testimony from before, but I just would really encourage a vote on this. I think this is the right thing to do in providing our efforts to try to meet the student where they're at and still hold them to an educational standard that helps them be successful. I hope that you'll vote for this amendment. Thank you.
Very well. Members, are we ready to vote? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Bly, I certainly understand what you're bringing forth because I've also worked in the alternative program. However, I think rather than putting this in statute now, that it would be good for us to give a directive as a committee to the department that they start looking more closely at the data they're receiving and come forward with a suggestion for us that they can live with as well as the ideas that you have. So that's just a suggestion.
Representative Bly, quickly, please.
Yes, we have attempted to have that discussion in the past, and I think we really need to make sure that we reach out to move things forward, and that's why I think this is important. You know, as was mentioned before, this bill was included in a previous education policy bill and did not make it through. Things have not improved since then, so we still need to do this.
Very well. Members, are we ready to vote? All in favor of the A27 amendment as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Bly. I'm told Representative Morgan has withdrawn the A28 amendment. That brings us back to Representative Dabney, the A4 amendment. Are we circling O'Hare still? Or are we?
No, those guys with those cool lights thingies.
Gotta love them.
They're waving us in.
Wonderful. Representative Dabney moves adoption of the A4 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer a short oral amendment on page 1, line 14. After the word 5, insert the phrase adult basic education.
Very well.
You're
allowing people time to write this down.
I thought I would.
Yes.
And then later on that same line, delete the phrase instructional experts and insert the word teachers.
Very well. Ms. Larson, if you can also help us place this on the record.
Mr. Chairman, members, on the H1151A4 amendment, page 1, line 14, after the word 5, insert adult basic education and delete instructional experts and insert teachers.
Very well. Members, are we clear?
Can we get one more read, please?
Sure. Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, members, on the H1151A4 amendment, page 1, line 14, after 5, insert adult basic education and delete instructional experts and insert teachers.
And the insert teachers, Ms. Larson, is after the word and.
That's correct.
Very well. Okay. Representative Sawatsky, I believe you precipitated this. So does this...
Yes, I accept this, Mr. Chair.
Wonderful. Representative Dabney, to your amendment.
Mr. Chair, as I said before, this simply establishes the advisory task force for the commissioner to work with in establishing the standards for a new standard adult diploma, and it has already been through GovOps.
And members, the D3 amendment has the first part of that bill in it. That very well. Discussion? Representative Crucia.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. Just a friendly suggestion. I'm wondering for the rule folks if we might include some language that would say with some number, at least 3 from rule, or is there a way to try to precipitate a little bit of more rule participation?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crisha, if you look down on page 1, line 15, it's already there.
Representative
Crisha? Rural, suburban.
It says, but doesn't actually quantify it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crisha, I'd be hesitant to do that when you only have 5 people if you make 3 of them from rural Minnesota. You're tilting it significantly. Well, I think you get 1 at least, maybe 2.
Okay.
I think there should be a balance between the geographic distribution, which you and I share a value of, and the commissioners and literacy action network's ability to identify who would make the greatest contribution. So it's a balance point.
I appreciate that. I'll take it. Maybe we could start with 5 rule and work your way. No, I'm good. Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Dabney, Representative Crisha, perhaps the conversation be continued as if this amendment goes on and the bill proceeds forward. Members, are we ready to vote? All in favor of the A4 amendment as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you. That brings us to Representative
Perdomo.
All right, members, we're at witching hour, 11:30. I don't think anyone has this room until 12:30. I think elections is the next committee here, room here. I am certainly willing to keep going. I know members are going in and out for others. Is that acceptable to the members?
Let's just do one more.
I've got to go.
Oh, really?
I got to go.
We have All right, members, then we're going to stand in recess until what time? After sessions will be at the call of the chair, so look for a notification from the chair from the floor of the House.
Mr. Chair, we should put everything back in our folder, shouldn't we,
yes,
so that our esteemed pages don't have to redo
indeed,
all this?
Indeed. Members, please help out the staff by putting your information back in the folders. So, members, and then we're back where? We'll be back in room 200. This committee stands in recess. We will come to order, members. There you go. And it didn't work out for him that well.
Yeah, but everybody remembers.
That's true. All right, members. So the goal here is to try to get done so we can all have a decent dinner. Representative Erdahl, you have the A5 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members.
So Representative Erdahl moves the A5 amendment.
I do. Thank you. This deals with the it's another way to deal with the problem brought up by Dan Devine and I guess 1,500 to 2,000 others in the state who deal with this problem of the failure to be able to pass the MPLE. And first I'd like to commend Representative John Ward, Representative Russo for their interest in work in this as well. Under the amendment that I'm offering, I would hope that this helps to further solve the problem. Under this, there are three different ways to pass and gain licensure. To obtain either a minimum SAT scores in critical reading, mathematics, and writing, or comparable minimum ACT scores in English language reading, mathematics is the major change here. After 3 years of failure, continue. If you can't pass the MTLE after 3 years, and you've exhausted whatever extensions you can get, the local school board can decide whether or not they wish to keep you. They will know whatever your ACT, SAT score was. They'll know your MTLE results. More important, they know the teacher. The 1 year extension under Representative Yaruso's bill is a good thing, but then again, this is through the Board of Teaching and it forms a task force come up with a solution. And I believe that the task force would be looking at something along the lines of what I'm proposing to do with this. Basically, that the local school board would be able to make the decision to continue someone in their school if they wanted to. And that's it.
All right. Members, discussion? Representative Erickson.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. Representative Erdahl, the question that we were discussing about teacher license, did we get an answer? Or
They would be, all licenses are issued through the Board of Teaching. So, Mr. Chairman, I represent Erickson. So it would be through the Board of Teaching, and it would be then through the local school board on a yearly basis.
Representative Erickson.
And this would allow the school board to continue to rehire until?
Yes.
Until they no longer wanted him or until he passed the test?
Yes.
Representative Erdahl. Representative Gaffney.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, I remain concerned about the language on 4.13 through 4.16, which would seem to allow someone who is working on temporary one-year licenses to achieve continuing contract in everybody but the cities of the first class tenure in those cities. And in perpetuity. Can you help me with that?
Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dabney, yes, it is silent on the issue of tenure. And so, My intention is not that they be dismissed. I mean that they would be able to have tenure, but the bill is silent on the issue.
Representative Abner.
Mr. Chair, we do have real challenges with the MTLE. I don't discount that at all. I've had some good conversations with folks, particularly concerned about immersion programs where you have non-English, non-first language English. You know what I'm saying.
Well done.
Did I get that one right?
Got it.
Can we go back to either baseball or airport metaphors? I'm much more comfortable there. Those folks who struggle with passing the MTLE, but then, of course, we want them teaching in a different language than English. But I feel like one-year licenses ongoing in perpetuity collides with tenure and continuing contract in ways that I don't understand and that I'm not comfortable with. Tenuring someone who has a one-year license that may expire at the end of the year, what status do they then have? I just don't understand.
Well, Ms. Chairman, Representative Dabney, first of all, the effective date is January 1st, 2014, except that those who are currently in this situation would be affected by a portion of it immediately. So, you know, the part that says that they get to remain at their job, I believe, would have immediate impact, whereas the next part on the rehiring would be in effect after January 1st, 2014. The Yaruso bill, a portion that is in this bill, would have, you know, after 1 year, they're done there. They're just done. At least this offers a little bit more, unless changes are made, of course, with the task force in Yaruso's bill. But this maybe isn't perfect, but it gives them something more. It continues their job if the school board so desires.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Something I would like to point out about rural schools in this bill and hiring teachers is our teacher hiring pool is small, comes from North Dakota or, you know, across the borders. But it makes it very difficult to hire teachers. In fact, I even am concerned about Representative Erdahl's start date of January 14th, simply because I have talked to a few of my superintendents, and they're telling me they're looking at hiring, but they will not hire these teachers that they desperately need because they're graduating from UND. And while they look really good, everything looks fine, they said they don't have that test, and they've gotten burned a couple times. They've had to let people go, and so they are not sure what they're going to do, and they've got to fill those positions because we're not talking about teachers, you know, a multitude of science teachers or, you know, whatever. We're talking about, in some cases, I've got teachers. Representative Marquardt, you know this. I've got a science teacher teaching all five grades in high school, or what is it? Yeah. They teach all of them, and they alternate chemistry and physics and so that they can get all that in and offer it to the students. So they've got one teacher. So while I agree with making sure our teachers are prepared, I'm very concerned about what this will do to my teacher pool and make it difficult to hire. So,
Representative Yaruso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're all kind of working from the same motivation here. We've got, you know, we're all trying to find fixes to the same problem. I've got a specific response and then kind of a more general response, if that's okay, Mr. Chair. On the question of whether the language that I had brought takes care of people beyond the 1 year, there are two ways that it takes care of people beyond the 1 year temporary. The first is that if someone is working for a district under a temporary license,
the district can request that that be renewed, and that would take care of people that are currently in teaching positions that are faced with their current temporary licenses expiring. And then, secondly, because it sunsets the test requirement with the intention that the task force formed would find a better solution, it is meant to take care of people beyond that 1 year that they would have the temporary license for new people that would be coming into the system. In a more general sense, the difference between our two approaches is that although you've got an alternative for people, your amendment is not doing anything to rectify the problems that exist with the current test. So it will allow that test to sit there as is with all the problems that we heard were associated with it, and substitute a different test that some of those same people may have some difficulties with also, because some of the issues we heard were about that form of test taking. So I still like my approach, where we're charging a group of people with really looking, revisiting this issue and figuring out a better way to assess the skills of teacher candidates.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, we've talked about this issue quite a bit, and, you know, with the hearings and everything. And, again, I respect Representative Yusso, Representative Ward for their ideas. I just think that my approach is direct. It goes, you know, to the heart of the concerns of the teachers who are involved in this, and would give them more comfort into the future. I'd like to be able to call up Dan Devine and say that, you know, we've got his problem solved.
Certainly is an alternative way to address this. Members, are we ready to vote? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just wanted to point out to you that the MTLE is probably less difficult than the ACT or the SAT in that on the math section, even though I know that some of you have looked at the sample test in it, you know, it's something that would require some review for some of us. There are only two application sections on the MTLE. Everything else is know or understand. And if you think about Bloom's taxonomy, it's to know, to understand, to apply. And then you get into analyze, evaluate, and synthesize. So those latter verbs that I used are the higher thinking order skills. And the SAT and the ACT are supposed to delve into those. On the basic skills reading test, only one of the sections of the test is above know, understand, apply. Only one section asks the takers to analyze. And in the basic skills writing, not a one of them goes beyond the first two parts of higher order thinking. It's know and understand. So, you know, I hope that if this task force becomes reality, or if Representative Erdahl's amendment passes, you know, that we're starting to think a little bit more clearly about what is it that we're expecting of our future teachers at whatever stage it might be that they take the MTLE. Because I really believe that the test that was designed through the Board of Teaching's work and checked and examined very carefully is really the statement that we want to make to the public and to our colleagues, that our teachers all have basic understanding, don't even have to go into the higher levels of thinking, in mathematics, reading, and writing. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Members, ready to vote on the A5 amendment. All in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No. I'm sorry.
Oh, division.
Division being called for.
Mr. Chair.
No. I don't want division. I'm sorry. I withdraw division. What am I thinking?
Rule.
But
rule.
I'm waiting for them to vote, and they didn't, so we won.
No,
Mr. Chair, there was some confusion over here about the amendment that I was trying to clear up, and I did not hear you call for the vote, and so I apologize on that.
All right. Members.
I was trying to answer a question.
I only heard one over there, Carlos.
This is due to vision.
Members, let's do the vote. All in favor of the A5 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Chair's in doubt. All in favor of the amendment, please raise your hand.
Gotta win some.
All, do you have a count? All right. All opposed to the A5 amendment, please raise your hand.
You're gonna do this all day.
Go over it all.
Yeah. But it's like this.
On a vote of 9 ayes and 6 nays, the motion does prevail. Members, we have the Representative Marquardt, are your people here? Why don't we do the A8 amendment?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I would like to make one amendment, if I might. At the conclusion of our recess, Ms. Hermanson from the Minnesota Department of Education said that there are a couple districts that are currently operating under the site governing, and so we wouldn't want to disrupt that. So Ms. Larson indicated putting in some sort of language that would basically make this apply to anything after a certain date, and I would yield to Ms. Larson if that would be okay.
Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, members, on the H1151A8 amendment, page 5, line 36, after the word later, insert, and applies to agreements entered into after the effective date of this section.
Members, are we clear?
Can you read it again?
Yes, of course. Ms. Larson, can you read that again?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, members, on the H1151A8 amendment, page 5, line 36, after the word later, insert, and applies to agreements entered into after the effective date of this section.
And Representative Marquardt, if you can tell us about your amendment and also what this language says. Representative Marquardt, you'll incorporate oral amendment.
Mr. Chair, I would incorporate that oral amendment.
Very well.
And it basically will not affect then any, there's only a couple schools that are currently operating under this and doing something, so it would not have any impact on those schools.
Very well.
Mr. Chair and members, I do have a testifier, Mr. Ted Coldery, who has worked a lot on redesign and looking at ways to improve student achievement. So if he could testify, that would be great.
Mr. Coldery, good evening. Welcome to the committee.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Ted Coldery. I'm an associate with Education Evolving. Thank you very much for the chance to be here again. We believe, as I think perhaps you do, that innovation and redesign is the positive, constructive way to approach the question of improving achievement. I've been mixed up in this question since the early 80s when I served on Governor Quay's Education Task Force, and over all that time, the national strategy about getting to our goals has assumed that we could continue just the traditional, we could work within the framework of traditional school, and that we'd reach our goals if we could simply add into that traditional structure standards, measurement, and consequences, the whole accountability package. And much of the effort since that time has been to do traditional school better. And some progress has been made, but after 30 years of effort, as that Harvard study I mentioned here on Tuesday evening concluded, and this is their quote, if we keep on doing just what we've been doing, we are never going to get there. So the question is, how can we begin to move beyond the framework, the givens of traditional school? I will say to you that I have heard more than one commissioner in Minnesota say in a private moment, we ought to blow it up and blow this system up and start over. And from time to time, there are people who come along and propose some grand comprehensive scheme to replace what we have today. But that is probably not a practical way to approach the question. It is probably not going to happen. As a practical matter, the introduction of anything significantly departing from traditional school is have to be introduced slowly and gradually, which is the way a lot of systems change. Most think about automobiles currently, energy, whatever. The systems are open to people who want to try new models. Nobody has to adopt them. If you want to drive a hybrid car or an electric car, you can do that, but you don't have to if you want to continue with your gasoline power. So we run two different models at the same time. So the strategy, we think, for testing out significant alternatives, significantly different approaches to learning, is what we kind of refer to as innovation-based systemic reform. The legislature took a little different route to this 20 years ago when it introduced the chartering legislation. And Minnesota's charter sector has arguably been the most innovative charter sector of any in the country. But we have been working, and others have been working a long time, to get a comparable process of change and innovation started in the district sector. I remember being before this committee in the 80s along with people from Jim Bartholomew from the Minnesota Business Partnership talking about giving additional authority to schools in the hope that if given approval by their district, schools would then begin to innovate and do different things. And in in the 05 session and later in the 09 session, the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers came here, interestingly, jointly with the Minnesota Business Partnership, and the legislature did enact the so-called self-governed schools legislation. Last year, as various of you will remember, including, I think, Representative Erickson, we came in, the people came in talking about adding a pedagogical purpose to the self-governed school legislation. In that case, individualization. And the bill this year would open the way. It would encourage, again, districts and schools to try real departures from the traditional givens of school, from the boundaries, the traditional boundaries of kindergarten and 12, from the notion of age grading, from the notion of whole class instruction, from the notion that schools have to be organized in the traditional bureau arrangement, can't offer teachers typical, truly professional roles. This seems to us as essentially a cautious kind of bill. It limits recognizing that change, radical change, significantly different models are going to appear in a small scale at the start. It limits the number of schools quite reasonably. It offers schools, encourages schools to try things. Innovation is letting people try things. It is a kind of a bottoms-up approach. Will it be effective? Enabling legislation is not self-implementing. It has to be pushed and encouraged, and we see two things in the bill that have not been in this before that are hopeful in that direction. One is at least the prospect that there will be some financial support for districts and schools interested in trying these alternatives breaking away from some of the givens of traditional school. And there is a charge to the commissioner that I think has not been in the legislation before to promote this. So we would encourage your support for Representative Marquardt's proposal. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I would be happy to answer any questions
if there are
any.
Are there any questions for Mr. Colder? Representative Dornes.
I don't have a specific question for the testifier. I can wait if someone else does.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Welcome, Mr. Coldre. We worked together the last 2 years, and I noticed that Representative Marquardt is amending some new legislation that was enacted just last year. So I'm wondering why you think we should forge ahead with this new language when we're still hoping that we have districts out there willing to take advantage of the individualized learning agreement that we put in law just last year.
I have the same question, Representative Erickson. Mr. Coldery.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, there are a couple of, I think, how would I say this? The effort to, by the legislature, to stimulate and encourage the system out there to begin to do these things needs all the help it can get. And if there is one program that comes down through the superintendents and encourages them to take the initiative at the district level to change and to do things jointly with other districts in the area of shared services, that's certainly good to do. This bill, I think, contains some language that's not been in before that actually speaks to schools and their teachers to encourage them to begin to move proposals toward their districts, in effect a bottom-up approach. And the combination of a bottom-up approach and a top-down approach would seem to us to be to make good sense. In addition, there is, as I said a minute ago, at least the prospect, I think Representative Marquardt intends and hopes that there will be some financial support for this. My understanding from a note I had this morning was that the MASA does not plan to ask any support, financial support this year for that program enacted last year. So there are these differences. They work together, they build on each other, and it would make sense to us to do them both.
Mr. Chair. Erickson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, the legislation we passed last year didn't require any additional funding because it's agreements among districts or between two districts. And we specifically said in statute, revenue for fiscal year received by the district shall be allocated to educational sites on the agreement between the school board. My concern is that maybe this is an option to what we have here, considering the fact it's not been used yet. And I might recommend to Representative Marquardt that we consider maybe a another subdivision that would launch into this instead of amending what we offered as innovation per some of your requests a year ago, before we launch off on, you know, dismantling this, so to speak.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Coldery, there seems to be some question about how do we get districts to lock in and do this piece. So I'm wondering if you could share with us what the plan is that Education Evolving has developed to work to kind of spread the gospel of this, how many FTEs you have, what the budget is, what the what districts have expressed an interest in moving in this direction. How do you get folks to pick up the ball on this? I need to do a baseball analogy, don't I? I was going football for a second. No, I'll pick up the ball, I'll admit, is generic, but pick up the ball and get it to first with this proposal. So what's your organization's plan? How many staff? What's the budget? What's the funding source? to move this forward. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davini, we don't have a particular budget or staff to work on this. A fair proportion of the people who are involved with us are work essentially as volunteers. I have been really encouraged by what Bob Wadle has told me recent weeks out of his conversations with a number of present and former superintendents. I think Bob would say if he were here tonight, which he can't be, that he's sensing now a greater interest on the part of superintendents in beginning to move this kind of thing than he has in the past. Tom Nelson has kind of become affiliated with us in the last little while. He's like Joe Graba, absents himself from Minnesota for the first 3 months of the year. But he and Joe were having lunch today in Phoenix with Tom Vander Ark. Tom will be back here at the end of the month. And Tom's contacts, Tom intends to work this with other superintendents. So we are hopeful that their conversations with superintendents can help implement both this new program of Representative Marquardt's and the one enacted last year, which we see as complementary rather than conflicting. The other one, again, I go back to this bottom up. We're very encouraged, and Joe Grava with our group has had some part in encouraging the interest, particularly him and the teachers and the local in Minneapolis, in taking the initiative to begin to move very new models. The process is a long process of persuasion, but these are all small beginnings, and they take a long time to develop. That just is the way major system change happens. So we will do what we can. And as I said, we are hopeful, and we do think that the language in the bill that would, in which the legislature is pushing the commissioner a little harder than perhaps the legislature has in the past, to move districts to delegate to schools the authority to try things, will be effective.
Very well. Representative Marquardt.
Oh, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. You know, K-12 education is a $15 billion every biennium endeavor. That's 15 Viking stadiums, just to put that in the perspective. And probably has more impact on creating the world's best workforce in our future economy than anything else we do. And with something that large and so much at stake, we really need to have not only the traditional model, which of course is usually the locked-in one, but we need to open up whatever we can, some other avenue where you've got the research and design that, you know, maybe there's one Thomas Edison in there that can spark some initiative that not only increases efficiency but reduces costs. And we have to, I think, have that. And we do in our system. But as Mr. Coldery and others have looked at this, they think this is an avenue to help enhance and kind of move things along a little bit. And I know Representative Dabney's and others are kind of concerned with kind of the vagueness of everything. But that's part of it. If it's too prescriptive, then you can't get the innovation. And that's really that's what has stifled innovation, not only in education, other things, is this kind of top-down approach that really stifles new thoughts. And as Mr. Coldery mentioned, this tries to emphasize a bottom-up. I know there's concerns here, and I would promise to any member as we move through the process and into the education finance, work with any and all members. Representative Erickson, I offered that to you earlier today. I really think it's important that we maximize some sort of a research and design component in education, and I think it would really be important. And like I said, I'm willing to work with members to as we move this forward.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Marquardt, is there anything stopping those schools from doing a bottom-up approach now?
Representative Marquardt.
Mr. Chair and Representative Heel, yeah, I think the structure right now makes it really difficult. I mean, I think with the site governance, you can do that now. Mm-hmm. But I think what this tends to do, if you look through here in some of the wording, creates more of an agreement. I think focuses a little bit more on achievement. And there's a portion in there on page 2 where expanding teachers' roles, which, of course, is where the rubber hits the road. And so I think it does create just a little more incentive for things to bubble up kind of from the school sites and so forth. But you know, under current law and also under what Representative Erickson had passed last year, some innovation zones, there are avenues for this. We just think this might make it a little easier to kind of get things going a little bit, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, could I comment on that?
Hold on a second, Mr. Calder. I just want to make sure if there's anyone else in the audience that wishes to comment on this bill. All right. So, Mr. Calder, why don't you do that, and then we'll hear from others in the audience.
Oh, just a quick comment with respect to the representative's point, Mr. Chairman. There really is. First of all, schools as schools don't have the authority to do anything, nor do teachers as teachers really have the authority to do anything radically different. Representative Erickson will remember the testimony, various of you will remember the testimony last year when Mr. Pye came to the committee. We've subsequently done this DVD, which is available, which is on our website, w.educationevolving.org. Tom Nelson appears in that. It's very interesting to listen to Tom out of his recent experience here as superintendent in Woodbury, West St. Paul, South Washington County, whatever, Stillwater also, I think, talk about the just intense pressures to keep everything the same. This is what we're really kind of up against. This is what's very difficult and where we're going to need a lot of work, as Representative Dabney suggests, to talk with superintendents. But it isn't probably going to come from the top down. It's going to come from schools and people in schools approaching their districts saying, we think we have ideas about how, if we could do things significantly differently, achievement would really improve. But it's going to be difficult to break.
Thank you for your testimony today, Mr. Calder. Mr. Schneiderwin.
Mr. Chair, my name is Kirk Schneiderwin. I'm on staff at the Minnesota School Board Association. And I think it's one of those deals where we hadn't seen this bill, and so it's one of those deals that we're trying to grasp all of the concepts and what it all means. And I think one of the things that is important is, and Representative Erickson touched on this, is the innovation zones that school districts tried to create last year, and they did create them, and then they didn't fund them. And so then to see a blank appropriation in here and have the commissioner encourage districts to do this, I mean, we're in a very competitive educational market right now, and I think that's one of the other pieces that requires the department to encourage this piece. So we really just have more questions about this, and I think one of the things that changes significantly is on page 227 is the conversion to I want to call it the site-based model, but it's now called the learning redesign agreement, where you used to have 60% of the licensed employees, and now it's scratching the 60%, allowing the school board to do that, or licensed employees with no threshold there. And so I think that would be a cause that needs to be discussed a little bit. And I think I've touched on the issue about the funding piece. I think that we have seen within the public school system, we have seen innovations. I mean, I go back to our home office in St. Peter, and I go back to the St. Peter School District. They have an Ag Academy where they have an online program, or actually a wireless bus that travels from dairy farms to the factory, the cheese factory in Le Sueur, the Anoka Step program, the Irondale innovation zones. And so there are innovations going on. I'm not saying that there aren't, but I think those are some of the things that I think that we need to have answered here just in terms of the mechanics of this and what it means for school districts. Mr. Chair, I'll stand for questions.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that wishes to testify? right. We do have some questions. Representative Keel. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking right at you. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's been a long day.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jan Allswiger, Education Minnesota.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Allswiger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Next time I'll wear red. It's a pleasure to sit here with Mr. Schneiderwind and agree on an issue. You know, I think it's great that this language has come forward so that we can have a conversation about it. I do think it is a significant change, and it may be worthy of a full hearing versus an amendment. And I certainly respect Representative Marquardt for bringing this forward. If you look at lines 1.12 to line 1.16, you know, we passed the charter school law some years ago, and we still really don't know what we have learned from charter schools and what we want to replicate from those. And then also, as Representative Erickson mentioned, we've got the innovation districts. So it might be worthwhile to study charter schools and those new learning ideas and new formations. And again, as Mr. Schneiderwind stated on line 2.27, when this language first came forward, Education Evolving and Education Minnesota worked long and hard to get to an agreement on some language, and Education Minnesota compromised to try to do something new. And so we came to an agreement, and one of the sticking points, of course, was on line 2.27, where it was kind of the ground up, having teachers involved, bringing it forward. But in this legislation, there is no requirement to have the teachers involved. And we would suggest that if you really want to create change in a school, get all of the teachers, or not all, but at least 60%, thinking that this is a good idea and that we want to move forward. So I think on line 3.36 as well, I think that at one point, you know, this legislation, the law said at least one half of the members shall be employees of the site. And I think that, again, is taking away some of the employee ownership in this. So it's not that it's a bad idea. It is that we think that this is worthy of far more discussion than today. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Allswiger. Are there any questions for Mr. Schneiderwind and or Ms. Allswiger? All right. We do. Oh, Representative Erickson, Roger. I'm sorry. Did you have a question for them?
I have a comment, but I'll.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Representative Roger.
Jan, if you would please come down. I might suggest kind of a new person to charter schools, that if we've had charter schools for 20 years and we haven't figured out half a dozen different models that work better than the ones that don't work, I'm not sure how we can say how successful of a program that's been.
So it doesn't sound like it was a question, but a comment. Ms. Allswiger?
Mr. Chair and Representative Erickson, we would love it if there was some kind of legislation that was put forward to provide a little more accountability or evaluation, maybe evaluation of charter schools, and what are those ideas that were implemented that should spread to other public schools. That is why charter schools were started, and I don't know that we've learned the innovations yet. And if there's something happening, the public schools would benefit from what it is that's happened there.
Representative Erickson, Sandra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this is a hurtful moment for me because this is my legislation that was enacted last year, and so, you know, when a member in another chair, you know, decides to amend my legislation, that stings because we worked very closely with Education Minnesota last year with Education Evolving. Senator Olson, this was one of her premier pieces, leaving us after her long years of serving and her very faithful service to the state of Minnesota. So, you know, I was taken aback when I realized this, you know, and I'm willing to work with Representative Marquardt, yes, with with perhaps, you know, a future idea. But, you know, Mr. Chair, I can't support this because it's undoing something that we worked so hard to put together and are awaiting participation and hopefully putting some funding toward this rather than taking this legislation and changing its direction, even though it has good intent. And I appreciate that, Representative Marquardt, but I would never do it to you. I want you to know. If I knew that you had authored something last year or the year before, I would never recreate a piece of legislation, something in law that you had authored without asking you if this would be a good idea. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Marquardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erickson, if we had to talk to people who had enacted laws, every single bill that is offered, we'd have to go back and find the author to see if it'd be all right to change. So I think that, Representative Erickson, this enhances what you've done. I mean, there's, as you heard, I think this makes it a little easier to get someone to come to the forefront. And there are some areas where you don't need a majority. It just says school board instead of 60%. Well, it still takes a school board, which is a majority, 51%, or even 50% of a staff. I mean, that's part of redesign. If Henry Ford had sat around with a bunch of people and tried to get 51% to say to build a new automobile versus trying to make the horse faster or stronger, he would have never got anything done. So a lot of times it's going to take a minority. That's part of things that are different from the ordinary, is that it's going to take a minority. And members, quite frankly, the powers behind the status quo are always much more powerful than the future. And I think it's important that, and I understand this is a leap of faith. I mean, when you're looking at redesign, something that we don't even know may come about, we don't even know that. But if we thought innovation back in the 60s was going from a black phone to a colored phone, which was a big movement in our family, I remember when we got the white phone versus the black phone, you know, we wouldn't get to where we are today. So, members, I, you know, vote as you wish. You know, it's, yeah, it's, but I just think it is a bit of a way in which we can actually try to do something. It's enhancing things. I don't really think it changes things all that much. There was something talked about, an agreement. The agreement still has to be either between the school board or this learning redesign site, which is still a facility, an age, a program, a department. I mean, that part, I think, just opens it up a little bit. It doesn't restrict it or really change it. But members, I'll leave it to your will. I mean, that's... And
just a quick comment. I'll call on you, Representative Erickson. I believe this 123B.04 was language that was developed with Education Evolving. And now we also have language here that Education Evolving has helped shape, if not shape. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, Representative Marquardt, I don't intend to make you the culprit in this because the three gentlemen standing up there in the gallery really should have come to me and spoken to me because we worked hard on this. And we involved Education Minnesota as well as Education Evolving. And they know that this has just gotten off the ground. So, you know, I apologize because you're right. We don't have to run around and get permission to change statute, you know, if we think we have a better idea. But those gentlemen all knew that this was Senator Olson's piece and mine. And because we worked, you know, if this had been on the fly, that would be different. But we worked so hard to get the players to come together, to make sure that teachers were empowered to make this kind of innovative change, and school boards at the same time. But we didn't do a top-down, we did a bottom-up. And I appreciate Ms. Allswiger bringing that up because there were Senator Olson and I spent a lot of time going over this, and I wanted to go a little farther than she did, perhaps more in the direction that Education Evolving wanted, but you know, she was a little reluctant to go that far, and I respected her decision to do what we did. And you know, we're waiting for school districts, for sites to take advantage of this. So I'm not going to call for a roll call, but I would like to.
Representative Nornes, Yaruso, and Keel.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a comment, and or several, but you know, the one thing I worry about is the students. They only go through school once, and if we screw that up somewhere along the way through our experimentation or whatever it is, it's hard to go back and correct that. And we had an example of that actually when my two sons were in elementary school. We had, I think, what they called schools without walls. At least that's what we had.
Yep, they were. Yeah. It was in a classroom.
And it accelerated because it was really an open classroom, and they could move as fast as they could or not. I had one son that just went gangbusters. The second one came along, and when he got out of that program into a traditional classroom, we found out he had just been goofing off. And he had a hard time catching up. He did, but it didn't work. It worked for some, it didn't work for... So there's an idea that it was here and went away. We had, back some years ago, and I don't remember exactly when, but Commissioner Mamangay, he had the idea of having the perfect size school. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And went around the state preaching that. Another great idea that never really happened, but you know, we were going to redesign school again. And when I first came in contact with a homeschool, I thought, now that's really the dumbest idea that I've seen. Only to find out through experience, some of those students are probably some of the best ones that I've seen. And they go to college, they graduate.
Trouble there for a second. Hold it back.
But I've had personal experience with some of those students, and they really are remarkable with what they are able to do. And that, of course, has to be the parents and the people that are doing the teaching, too. But so I've come, and that's probably the least expensive form of education that the state of Minnesota has. It doesn't cost much to educate those kids. So as we go through this, I guess I'm just throwing out just a word of caution that you know, we've done some experimenting before, and I just hope that as we move forward, and I guess at first I thought I could also support this amendment, but I may be backing off. Maybe it's not quite time yet. Not that the idea is bad, but I think that we just have some concerns about it. But so those are my thoughts.
Thank you, Representative Nornes. Representative Russo and Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to speak to the question of, you know, isn't this what we've tried to do with charter schools? And the one big difference I see, well, one of the differences I see between this and the charter school movement is, as charter schools have been implemented in Minnesota, we have not funded them to the level that a public school district is typically funded, because all they get is the per pupil level. And since this would be housed within a school district, it's more akin to some of the magnet schools. So it would be more appropriate to compare it to some of those, I think. Excuse me. But I'm kind of a little bit amused listening to some of the commentary, because a moment ago we had Representative Erdahl and I, you know, going at undoing each other's stuff, but... I guess I should have whined a little more. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Yours. Art lessons. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to point out, when we talk about top or bottom-up approaches to doing different innovative things, I've watched schools and you know, I have a closer relationship with the schools in my district, but I've seen some absolutely great things that have been staff directed in their schools that they're sharing with other schools, and they're doing those things. I just saw a fantastic improvement in kindergarten reading, kindergarten and first grade reading by some implemented innovative things that, that one school did, and they are now sharing it with their district friends, and it didn't, it cost them some money, but it wasn't as expensive as implementing a required program. And then I got another school in my district that I really visited with quite a bit, and I told them, I said, come to me if you need to have some kind of help with innovation funding or whatever, and they're implementing it within their own school, but they're hoping to do that within the school, the rural schools, and in a circle, so that they're able to share different things, and they're small enough that that will make sense for them. But I really think that maybe we should step back a little bit and, you know, while encouraging it, let them make those choices and come to us with, hey, this works, and so we should maybe do some new things. Because I really think that those innovations are happening. They really want those kids to be successful. And I can't tell you, the reading program, I saw a whole slug of kids in the bottom. They had four reading programs, slots. And when they got done with those kindergartners, they had started, and I think it was 2 months later, those kids went, when they tested them, from the bottom ranks, they only the kids in the bottom ranks were just like three or four kids that had such grave learning disabilities. Otherwise, they had moved all those children at least one to two higher. And I'm anxious to talk to them, because they've been doing this a while, and those kids are now... oh gosh, they've got to be in fourth or fifth grade now. So I was curious as to how their testing was doing, but I guess my point is that I think those innovations are happening in our local schools, and and then they need to ask us for funding if it's something unusual. But maybe they can work it out within what we give them in the future, or just in their own budgets, the way they change things. So.
Thank you, Representative Bly, and then we're going to move to a vote. Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. I just wanted to make a quick comment about whether or not charter schools have been offering innovation, and some of those innovations are good, and are there schools that copy them? There are four or five charter schools near my district or in my district, and they're doing some very innovative things, and they're great schools, and they've been there for a long time. Not all schools who know about what they're doing want to copy that or want to be influenced by that innovation. And so even though there is very good innovation out there in some schools, it doesn't always translate that it gets picked up or talked about. But on the other hand, there have been influences that I've seen happen from these charter schools where teachers have tried something different. And there is innovation happening. We shouldn't say that it isn't. But I think I support Representative Markworth's bill, because I think it does open up another avenue. It is very difficult in the culture of school to make some changes, and we need as many ways as we can to encourage that and help that happen. So I applaud Representative Markworth for his bill.
Very well. Members, Representative Markworth moves adoption of the A8 amendment
as amended.
That's right, as amended. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails.
Division.
Division being called for. All in favor of the motion, please raise your hand. All opposed to the motion, please raise your hand. On a motion of 7 ayes to 8 noes, the motion does not prevail.
And Mr. Chair,
yes,
thank you for the discussion. I really appreciate that. Well, I mean, to offer that, but, you know, it was House File 1342, and we didn't do it. But thank you for the time, and members, thanks for the discussion.
And thank you, Representative Markman. Thank you for continuing to push both here and in this committee, this committee and your committee. A constant challenge out to our existing system to stretch and reach, because clearly right now what needs to be done isn't getting done. Thank you.
Thank you.
We have the A-10 amendment. Who has that amendment?
Mr. Chair, I withdraw that.
The A-10 amendment has been withdrawn. We have the A-14 amendment. I believe that's Representative Faust.
Pardon me?
A14 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My testifier is still not here, right, and we'll give her a little bit more time, and if we need to, I can do it without her, but I'd rather have her.
Very well. Why don't we come back? The A16 amendment?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Wills, you wish to move the A16 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the A16 amendment, and essentially this amendment is addressing the concerns about the grad test and just simply requiring a minimum threshold to reach on a score to pass the grad test to earn a diploma.
Very well. Discussion. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, Representative Wells, I think that the amendment is written actually as applying the minimum score to the new set of assessments that with the college and career, which is fine. That's just a clarification. So, I would speak against this amendment. As we've worked with both post-secondary and K-12 on the high school redesign, all the assessment people that we've had working with us are opposed to cut scores. The point of view being that in the college and career readiness approach, you're working each student toward their maximum potential. They may never be able to do Algebra 2, which a minimum cut score in math might require, but they may be able to walk out of high school prepared to work at a manufacturing site or in a nursing home with a certificate. So minimum scores don't serve, I think, maximizing the potential of every student.
Representative Wells.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that comment, and I think that the concern is somewhat addressed in the amendment because it doesn't actually establish the minimum threshold in the amendment, but has the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities Chancellor, in consultation with the Commissioner, establishing that. So that minimum threshold would be worked out, and we would find that level that would be acceptable where we wouldn't be compromising students' success.
Mr. Chair.
Further discussion, Representative Biner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The point is a minimum score would still function as a cut score unless you had a range of scores, and that's not what this amendment speaks to. And it would have to be a broad range of scores to address the range of college and career readiness from someone who was going to go to work straight out of high school versus someone who might be going to 8 years of graduate school, to become a researcher. So the idea is to have that range so that you have the very high expectations at all levels of ability.
Further discussion? Representative Sean Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, in defense of this amendment, I would hope that we don't set a goal for our students that's so limited that they can't leave high school and have opportunities galore that are prohibited because we're now saying you only have to achieve what you're capable of achieving. If I'd have done that in my classroom, I think that my students probably would have revolted because the one thing I think that students expect from teachers is that you will find how to move them to that point above what they expect of themselves. And so looking at a floor, at a minimum, and maybe it'll turn out to be a range, Representative Brainerd, but I think we're selling ourselves short if we don't set an expectation for our students that even though they're going through this alleged college and career path, that they will have the math skills, for example, to perhaps, and I remember this in young men, as juniors, they blossomed and suddenly they got it. And whether it was in reading or math or history or some other area, suddenly they had that maturation in their thinking to know that, hey, I really can do this and beyond. So let's be careful that this session we're not setting the standard so low that we're not encouraging students to go beyond what I think I hear you saying, Representative Brainerd.
Mr. Chair, well, if I expressed that thought, that's certainly not what I intended. I would say instead of minimum competencies, we're expecting maximum competencies of every single student. But the focus on, I actually have some research about on cut scores that I've just begun to plow through, but the focus on a minimum cut score actually reduces the focus on maximum competency. And the idea is that every student will be challenged in terms of, so the testing system we're proposing putting in place works with a student's goals, aspirations, and abilities in a constant advising relationship where they're being challenged to perform at their level. And when they have that aha moment, they will be challenged to go to the next level. That and benchmarks do perform in a very similar way, except they're flexible benchmarks in relation to that career path and goal. And they do challenge students to go beyond the minimum.
Further discussion, members? Very well. If not,
Mr. Chair?
I'm sorry, Representative Wilson.
Thank you. I appreciate that in both comments, Representative Brainerd and Representative Erickson. And I guess just my concern is that if you have no minimum at all, you have nothing to strive beyond. And I think it's that we're not discounting that we want to challenge students and encourage them to excel, but I think it's critical to have at least some base that we're working from and encouraging them to strive beyond.
Mr. Chair, just one last comment. Remember, our students are all passing classes that are based on Minnesota standards, a curriculum that's standards-driven and standards-based, benchmarks within that. So they are achieving all the way along, if they've passed these classes, which are required to graduate, a standards-based a diploma. So I think there isn't any risk of no expectation here.
Representative Benson, Representative Urso, and then Representative Erickson.
I did not ask for.
Okay, your name is here. Representative Urso.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm concerned that this requirement brings us back to a point that we talked about earlier, that with a requirement to graduate from high school being that you are qualified to be accepted to a college program, we leave no ground for students that cannot go to college at that time. That does not mean they will never go to college. But we know a lot about brain development. We have students that have a variety of circumstances in their life. We have students who have limitations. And this leaves no option for students who are not prepared for college at the age of 18 to obtain a high school diploma. And we have students. We cannot pretend that every student is going to magically be able to go to college at age 18. We do not have a magic wand. We have students that have limitations that will not be able to do that. And is it right to say that you're, and I'm struggling to find a verb I can use here on the tape, okay, that you're out of luck if at age 18 you're not ready to go to college? We're going to write you off, we're going to cast you on the dung heap of life, and you don't even get to come out with a high school diploma. And I don't think that's right.
Representative Erickson, Sandra.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to ask Representative Brainerd to yield.
Representative Brainerd?
Yes. Thank you. Representative Brainerd, do you think teachers actually will test to the benchmarks if there's not a requirement such as the grad?
Mr. Chair, yes, absolutely. That's the premise of the whole assessment system we're working with. It. We'd use something that parallels the EPAS system where you have the, what's the first one called before the plan? The Explore. So the idea of the Explore is to conjoin a student's goals and aspirations with their academic abilities and then take that test. We use it in some of our schools, but we don't really use it actively or assertively to give a lot of direction to class choices in high school, and that is the goal, that it be a device for aligning the student's ambitions with their academic choices. So, yes, that is the premise of our whole the whole transition to a college and career readiness focus and MNSCU's whole focus in working with us on high school redesign.
Very well, members. Further discussion? Representative Wills, any, your amendment, final words? Or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do appreciate your consideration of the amendment and the discussion that we've had, and I do believe that this is important to keep in place and that it would work well with benchmarks and that it does provide the leeway to establish that minimum level. And I believe that students will be challenged and encouraged to succeed. And I do really appreciate the focus on utilizing the Explore plan and ACT pathway, and I think this would work well with that. So I ask for your support.
Members, I want to thank you for the, before we vote, I want to thank you for the conversation we just had. This is really at the core of much of what we've been focused on this year, and so it's been very important that we have a very deliberate and careful debate and conversation here. Very well. Representative Wells moves the A16 amendment. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion does not prevail.
Can you vote?
Very well.
No.
We have the A19 amendment.
Correct.
A19?
Representative Keel.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Keel moves adoption of the A19 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is to remove a little bit of the requirements in special education, not the services for special ed students and what they do, but the paperwork that is involved. I had the privilege of being invited to some of my border schools, at which time they informed me we were going across the border to North Dakota, and we sat down and we talked to their special education director, who is actually going to be retiring this next year, and we discussed what they were struggling with, and a lot of what they talked about was the immense amount of paperwork that Minnesota requires over and above what the federal government does. Things like they have to paperwork, and I'm probably going to tell Representative Sawitzky things that she knows already, but paperwork that has to be done in 30 days as opposed to 60. The comparisons when I sat and talked to the instructors along with their directors, the comments were that they end up in Minnesota quite often were hiring subs for the students that they're supposed to be working with because of the requirement of paperwork that is needed in special ed. And so this is really intent on just lightening up the paperwork that is required by our special ed teachers and especially directors and giving them a little more ability. And once again, I want to remind people it's not to remove special ed, you know, instruction from students. I realize that that's very important, but...
Very well. Discussion, Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure who should answer my question. Maybe Representative Sawatsky even. Does somebody know how much extra paperwork there is compared to the federal requirements? Are we talking 10% more? Are we talking 10 times more?
I can't give you the percentage. Excuse me. I'm... Representative Sawatsky might be able to answer that better.
Representative Sawatsky.
Mr. Chair, and Jan, you might need to help me out with this a little bit, but I thank you for bringing this because this is the very issue that I am here as representative because I'm very frustrated with the special ed, more requirements from the federal government. And I do disagree a little bit with the directors having paperwork, because all day long they get to just sit and do paperwork, so I don't care if they have to do more or less. It's the, you know, the boots on the ground that we're taking time instruction out of the day with the kids. I can't tell you how much more the state requires. I do know, and I want to go on record with this, that that who we're going to really upset here, and rightfully so probably, but you know, the parents are a huge advocate for the child and for the special ed program, and I get that, you know, parents want some things that maybe the, and I'm making some assumptions here too, because I've never been on the board to create the paperwork that the state does versus the federal government, but we need to make it technically, the IEP is a deficit-driven document. We have to state why they are showing deficits and then what we're going to do for goals and objectives. Mm-hmm. So I do know that the audit, that there has been an audit on looking at what the special ed program is, and I know that that's part of the governor's task force, is to reduce the paperwork. So whether or not this goes into effect, I do know that there are some checks and balances that are going to be taken care of with the governor's proposal. So with that, I am all for reducing it, and not to downgrade or not to make the IEP a lesser document, but I don't know why we're spending, because that's where all my, the majority of, I'm really good at doing paperwork because I have to meet the federal guidelines. I'm really great at that. I could be a much better teacher than I am. And so I agree with this, but I can't tell you how much more we have.
Representative Falls, I'm wondering if perhaps the department might have some information, the Department of Education, that might be helpful here. Mr. McHenry.
Mr. Chair, members, Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. I think just overall, I think from the administration, from the governor and the commissioner, they are interested in reducing paperwork for teachers and administrators. They want to free up as much time as possible for teachers to spend with students in the classroom. Some of the things, before I get to the specifics of this amendment, I just do want to lay out, there are some things we have done through the administration. There was a reduction in paperwork through the total special education system report that districts do annually each year. It was about a 270-page report, reduced to about 17 pages. Further in our budget, or in the governor's budet, he's included $1.8 million to produce model IEP or IDEA paperwork to streamline what actually districts need to do to make sure they're complying with federal guidelines. The one thing I would say is that there is, as far as what paperwork it goes beyond, what state paperwork goes beyond federal paperwork, I think it's a more complex question than just saying what's state and what's federal. You all just did have a chance to hear or see the release of the legislative auditor's report on special ed, and I think there's some great suggestions to come from that that we would like to see move forward, and we want to continue working on that. But for example, there are issues that that should be considered and that the legislature should consider specifically if it's wise to reduce either paperwork or some of these mandates. For example, districts aren't, by federal regulations, aren't required to have a special education director, but by state statutes they do. Is that something that's good or not? You can look at some of the requirements of having some parental involvement that goes beyond federal requirements. I think that's something that would be good for the legislature to weigh in on. This might be an issue that could be we could better address by reviewing and maybe addressing each of these mandates or paperwork or state regulations that go beyond federal regulations by using, for lack of a better term, a scalpel rather than a hammer. But it's something that we're committed to continue doing. We have been working with Representative Newton and Senator Carlson on a bill that's
that's looking at having some caseload reduction. We did offer a couple of areas in rule where we'd like to see repealed, but as the bill has moved forward, we have been working with Sue from NAMI, or Ms. Aberholden, I apologize, and also Elaine Keefe from PACER. And we think it's important to do what we can to reduce as much paperwork and keep as much time, for teachers to be freed up within the classroom. We want to make sure we keep all advocates at the table when we do this responsibly.
Thank you. Ms. Aberholden, you weren't here when the question was posed, but I think you have the amendment before you, and Representative Faust had posed a question on the A19. And Representative Faust, perhaps you can just quickly repeat that for Ms. Aberholden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, my question just is on how much additional paperwork is involved with the state regulations compared to the federal regulations. I mean, is it just a little bit, or 10 times as much, or where are we at in that relationship between the two?
Ms. Aberholden.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Sue Aberholden, NAMI, Minnesota. Sorry, I had another bill upstairs, which hopefully hasn't started yet. It's actually really difficult to say, because what we do know is that in some situations, it's actually attorneys on the local level that are really asking them to add more paperwork than what is required. I will say that I have gone through this exercise of comparing where state exceeds federal at least three times. Now, granted, I've been around for a long time, but three times probably at least in the last decade. And so we know exactly, which comma is different, which tiny piece is more. And usually, actually, all the groups have agreed on where we exceed. And on many things, we've said, well, that we should do that. What we are totally missing, though, from this conversation, and some of you may have read my letter to you, is that we're not asking the right question. The question really needs to be is, how can we provide the most cost-effective, most cost-efficient services to have the best outcomes for children with disabilities? My concern is that we've been locked into this, this thing about where are we more than the federal government, that we've lost the opportunity to think creatively about how to really change this. And so we get locked into this discussion, and you have the advocates and the, school boards and the, teachers and MACE and everybody sitting there, with clenched, hands trying to figure out what can you save, instead of really breaking down those barriers and say, how can we do this differently? Is there something better that we can do to this? I think if you look at a lot of the comparisons, you will see that you aren't even going to necessarily save any money. And so, again, we get locked into this argument instead of, again, let's break free from this. I don't think there is anyone in this room who has sat through this task force who would ever want to do that again. I think we have, we've been in a closed, no air room plenty of times that, where it's kind of an aversive procedure at this point. But I also think that when we focus on just so if you look at this, well, we know that we do more in early childhood. So does that mean we wouldn't do any of the early childhood paperwork that's required? This is it's just too broad. I'm sorry, but it is. And I do think that we've had some discussions over the last, 5 or 6 days, and everyone has kind of said, we would be more than happy to come into a room and really talk about how can we do this differently, but allowing ourselves the freedom to be creative about it. And I'm sorry that was a long answer to your question.
Quite all right. Thank you, Ms. Aberholden. Representative Benson, and then Representative Brainerd.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is talking just about the paperwork and not talking about what requirements we think ought to be the services being provided for the children. It seems that it's turned around. I don't know how I can vote for this, although I'm sympathetic. It seems that we should be spending our time deciding whether or not we should only meet the federal standards, or whether we should have additional standards because of Minnesota's tradition of educational, attainment excellence we're trying to achieve. There's also the financial aspect to all this. We know that special education in Minnesota is very expensive, so it goes, beyond simply paperwork here. So I'll have to oppose it only because
we haven't had the discussion about how many services we think are appropriate for Minnesota children. So it's just that's where I'm at, I guess.
Thank you. Representative Breiner, then Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to recall all of us to the state auditor's report that we heard at length in a joint committee hearing. At least maybe, most of us, maybe we didn't all hear it. I can't remember if it was, maybe it was finance committees. Okay.
No, I did, we didn't.
Well, so the state auditor's report is worth a look, and this is what I would say. They raised this question explicitly in the state auditor's report, and they go into some detail about how we should approach figuring out the answer to the question, because what's said in the auditor's report is it's not just, you know, state regulation at a certain level and federal at another, but there's unevenness in which might be better serving the needs of our students. They did a lot of discussion around this issue, and what they challenged the department to do is come up with an evaluation tool to understand whether either the paperwork or the requirement is in the best interests of students, and not whether it's more or less than one system or another. So I think if we all looked at that section of the auditor's report, we might be in a better position to proceed. So from my perspective, this is just premature, given that we've had that auditor's report just on the table recently.
Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree with Ms. Abreholden. I think we should just vote no. Thank you.
Senator Keel, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess what I want to say to everyone who's saying no, and the paperwork, Representative Benson, that's not my goal here. My real goal is to point out that teachers, special ed instructors, are not with students. They're ending up spending too much time, and the comparative conversation I had with it's actually a cooperative that is special ed teachers work in all different schools, along with the North Dakota instructors, but the point being is that they all talked about the special ed instruction cost because they were pulling teachers out of classrooms, and furthermore, I think, at least my personal experience with family members who have special ed instruction, is that when you change their instructor and inconsistency, and they've got these subs and they've got other people bebopping in and out, they are not as successful. And I think that you have to work with those kids a while to figure out how they function and where their successes are as well as their needs. So when you're pulling that teacher out, you're making it harder for the kids, and that's the students, and that's what really this, you know, and this is permissive language. It doesn't say a school has to do it. And here again, this is a good way for local schools to make some innovative moves without changing too many of the laws, making it, you know, and I understand with the report coming out, I've had conversations with my special ed instructors that I've talked to, and they would like to see more done, but they would be happy with this. So, thank you.
Representative Sandra Aaron.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to echo what Representative Keel just mentioned, and that's that there are opportunities, because this is permissive, for school districts to be innovative, to probably challenge the department on what Representative Breinert mentioned so succinctly is said in the report by the OLA. And I think we have a beginning point here for some ability for local districts to make decisions about what is it that they must report rather than what is it that the state thinks they should report.
Members, Mr. Heller had asked me to speak to this issue. We've not heard from this session, and I thought we should afford him an opportunity to do that. Then we have a Representative Sawatsky question, and then we're going to take a vote. And Mr. Heller, we're obviously a little pressed for time, so if you could be brief, I'd greatly appreciate it. But it's very good to see you. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair, and members, for allowing me to speak today. I'm currently here unofficially representing the Twice Exceptional and Disabled Learners, Minnesota. And regarding this Bill 19 amended, I think it's important that as leaders, and likely as you know, Minnesota targeted five areas of giftedness. One is leadership. That you should look at the application regarding how this paperwork integrates into engagement with the school staff, the parents, and the student. Also, as we also include the integration piece, as Minnesota want to go down the road to integrate more with other agencies. And also, that would be the framework and the tools. How does this work as it relates to if people would only review that report from the legislature auditors on a, in appendixes, hopefully they'll truly make it fully accessible with my reader. Right now it's not currently accessible with my screen reader. As you know, Minnesota passed a law in 2009 to require this year that all documents be fully accessible based on 201 and 508 requirements. Make that fully accessible, first of all, for the public to review. I suggest that the leaders to review those appendixes and compare contrast as relates to paperwork. As you know, the governor, I believe, already had stated that we could go electronic more and that stuff would be more streamlined. I'm all for making stuff understandable, because if you can't understand it, the information in front of you can't apply it. As you know, Minnesota uses the six steps of taxology with the MCAs, and I think you could apply that to this as well. Once again, the how of learning, which is one of the elements of Universal Design for Learning, is the application, the show, the do, I call learning profile. Basically, if I can't access something in a certain way, based on how it's created, or how I gather and acquire information, based on how it's represented, I find it really hard to be engaged in a process when it comes to comprehension and application.
Mr. Heller, I'm going to ask you to wrap it up here.
Last but least, this whole bill, I would oppose it if it would undermine the total special education system manual. It is complex. It could streamline it, make it more friendly, not just for special ed staff and teachers, but for parents as well, and especially the student, because eventually they have to self-advocate for themselves in middle or high school and beyond. And I think that's important, once again, as we turn the page. And I appreciate your time. I would oppose this bill because it's so broad and sweeping. Until we know how the framework, for instance, the timeline piece, affects students, what was the whole idea behind that, and why we want to go to federal, when Minnesota wants to be at a higher level. Who has the master plan? They need to show the leaders here. What is the master plan regarding all these prior laws and just trying to make everything templated, a boilerplate like the federal? I don't know who has the master design, but I hope someone comes up with it and make it in a affordable, easily electronic, friendly format. Thank you again for this time.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. It's good to see you again. Yeah, Representative Sawatsky, and then I'm going to ask Representative Keel, since she's the author of the amendment, for last word, and then we'll vote. Representative Sawatsky.
Representative, or Mr. Chair, and Representative Keel, and I agree with you that once in a while when we're getting down to our 30-day deadline, and our teachers are conscientious, at least the staff that I work with, that we would much rather be with the kids than hire a sub. And it only gets what we do in, I'll say, Wilmer, is when it gets to be crunch time, they will supply a sub, which is expensive, and it's not fair to the student, and it's not fair to us, because you have to, you know, it's just the chain events of getting doing your sub plus plans and all that, and it costs money. But the other thing is the mental health of doing the paperwork, because we want to be with the students during the day, so then you do it before or after hours and on the weekends, and that's where we're burning out special ed teachers, is we're constantly, you know, doing notes. And we all know that it comes with it. Comes with the job that your day isn't done as a teacher. You're always correcting papers, but you're doing that plus the paperwork. And so I agree that I would like to revisit this issue and review the report and really come up with a better plan for special education, because it is a bigger event than just a few minutes here.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate this, and I do think this is a bigger conversation. I thought this would be a good way of starting, letting schools to local schools try if they would like to do some changes, and that's really what I was after, and not to do any damage to children at all. That's not my intent. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Keel. Moves adoption of the A-19 amendment. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Representative Bly, you have a motion? Representative Bly.
Representative Mariani, it's come to my attention that in a vote I took earlier, I wasn't fully aware of the repercussions, and so I would like to move that we reconsider the A5 amendment.
Representative Bly moves reconsideration of the A5 amendment.
And I'm glad that President Rudolph is here, because we wouldn't want to do a comment.
We would not do a reconsideration without an author here, not in this committee.
If I could just say that I very much appreciate Representative Rudolph bringing his amendment and really like the spirit of what he was trying to do. I was not aware that some sort of the issue would affect the Arusa's epidemic. Probably because I wasn't paying enough attention. At any rate, that's the reason that I would like to second track.
Very well. Discussion, members, on reconsideration. Representative Verdolph.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Bly. I think you cast a very fine vote, just a little bit ago. And, you know, there are a couple areas, like on the date of enactment, I mean, might not have been plain on, but that has all been cleared up when I reread it. Article C, which deals with the school board making the decision, does cover everyone in the pipeline. The Article B covers, that's the ACT, SAT, cut score stuff. That's after January 2014. I've been trying to get, one concern that I had deals with the word temporary. The department is going to get a ruling on that, and if a change needs to be made, it will be. I will say that if there's some other things that, and Representative Russo and I have been discussing this and trying to make sure that both of our goals are met through this piece of legislation. I would urge you just to leave it the way it is. It's got another stop going to education finance. If there are some changes that need to be made, maybe perhaps something of Representative Russo's put back in the bill, that it could be done then.
Very well. Members, all in favor of the motion to reconsider, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. Representative Erdahl, your amendment is before us, the A5 amendment. I think this is the way to do it. We have to vote because we just voted to reconsider. So now we have to vote on your amendment, and that's fair. Representative Verda, I actually been checking to see if there was a way to separate out, because I think there is interest in some of the approach here, but I think some of the angst has to do with the loss of the language in Representative Urusel's language that had to do with sunset.
And
Representative Verdahl.
And Representative Mariani, Mr. Chairman, I think, well, we could do it right now. I mean, if you wanted to add that sunset stuff back in, it's fine with me.
Representative Erdahl, why don't we do this? Why don't we withdraw the A5 amendment, see if we can logistically, mechanically do that. I'm told that we can't, but let's do due diligence and see if that's possible. And you have my word that we'll bring the A5 amendment back before us for a vote.
All right.
Very well. Representative Morgan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl had actually talked a little bit about his amendment. I like some of the ideas he has in there. If we can't figure it out tonight, or if we're about to be done, maybe, perhaps, I don't know, I would be happy to continue to work with Representative Erdahl and Representative Uru, so I am on the next committee, and I would be happy to offer an amendment that the three of us could agree upon there, if that would be acceptable to the two of them. So that's another option, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative
Davenport. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would urge the parties to take Representative Morgan up on his generous offer. I am concerned that there's this sunset issue, but there's also the tenure issue, and there is a commitment from this majority that we don't simply pass things along to the next committee and say, no, we'll fix it there, but instead we respect the jurisdiction and the expertise of each committee. And I think that is, and Chair Marquardt might disagree with me, and he's certainly welcome to do so, but that is a policy issue, not a finance issue, and we should get it right here. And if we're not prepared to get it right, then we shouldn't do it.
Wise words from Representative Dabney, and that's why I suggest that we do a little bit of a timeout, see if something could be done here yet today. Members, we will be hearing bills next week, and we can also look to move something next week if we can't get at this this week. Representative Erdahl, what you're hearing is some real interest to try to make this work without doing violence to Representative Urusel's bill. Representative Isaacson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would echo Representative Dabney and say that Representative Erdahl, I'm very interested in the last three portions of this and understanding how that works better, and have no substantive problem with that. My only concern is the very first part. So if you get that out of there, I'm much more concerned. In the very first part where I'm just looking at my briefing, I'm sorry, that makes no sense to you. I realize that now until I just said that. The look in your face told me everything. Let me try. On my cheat sheet, I'm going to be clear about that. Let me state that again. I would not vote for removing the sunset. However, the other portions of it, which are the ACT-SET parts, and talking about remedial assistance and talking about the temporary licenses, I would be very open to having that discussion and possibly supporting that option. So if you remove the getting rid of the sunset, I think I could find my way to that. Thank you.
And Representative Isaacson, I have never peeked over a GOP member's shoulder to
read. I would that. Never dream of doing that, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I've been accused by some of being given the DFL cheat sheet. Really, I don't. I don't get them.
Representative Erdahl, I take that back.
Representative Erdahl withdraws the A5 amendment. Why don't you kind of kibitz off in a corner? Perhaps you might want to speak with Ms. Larson. Let's see what we can do, if we can do anything here tonight. We will bring back the A5, and then we'll decide at that point what to do. You have my word on that. So let's move on, members. We have the Representative Falls. Yes? No?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the A14 amendment.
Wonderful. Representative Falls moves the A14 amendment. Representative Falls.
Should have copied my cheat sheet and handed it around.
Mine?
But he's having fun.
And I'm going to phone a friend right away, Brad Lundell, because I'm going to say what I understand happened, and then hopefully he can fill in the gaps. But I understand that there's been some new rules that have come into place, and in order to be a special education director, in order to get that license, the new requirements were that they had to have been a teacher. And one of the most respected special education district executive directors, I think is what they call themselves, is Kim Gibbons, Dr. Gibbons, at St. Croix River Education District. And she came up through the school as a school psychologist. And so she does not fit that qualification. And so what this amendment does is it changes the rules so that somebody coming up through that route can also become the special education director. So I'll leave it at that and phone a friend and let Brad Lundell fill in the gaps that I left there, if that's all right, Mr. Chair. Okay.
Mr. Lundell, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Brad Lundell. I'm here tonight representing the Minnesota Administrators of Special Education. We'd like to thank Representative Faust for putting forward this amendment tonight. What has happened is that the Board of School Administrators put into rule a requirement that a special ed director have 3 years of teaching experience and a valid teaching license. As Representative Faust has pointed out, and this, at least at this juncture, hasn't affected people in the field, but many people come up through the school psychologist, the speech-language pathologists and the school social worker track to become special ed directors. We believe that this really puts an unfair onus on a very, very highly qualified group of school support personnel, many of whom have come into the special ed licensure field over the years. For comparison's sake, to become a school psychologist, you have to have, it's a master's degree level program that requires a 1 year internship before one can become a school psychologist. We've worked on with Education Minnesota on this language to make sure that not somebody with a school psychology license just coming in off the street would say, I want to be a special ed director. They would have to show that they have experience working with students, parents, and other school and in school environments. And I think that that's very, very important. We certainly want to work with Education Minnesota, you know, and work along with them on this. The other thing I would say is in there, we would be willing to, more tightly define that language as well as to how many hours are necessary to, I think it's pretty much vague right now as to how much experience. We would certainly be willing to flesh that out into some kind of hour amount if down the road, if this is approved, and then down the road, if there's need for more definition, we're certainly willing to do that. We're also going to work with the Board of School Administrators. They are SANS executive director right now, but I think that we'll work with them in the as well to make sure that this issue is taken care of both now for candidates now and in the future. But I think that we would feel very, very comfortable if this language were adopted, and we would support Representative Faust's amendment.
Very well. Representative Faust?
I just hope everybody votes for it. Thank you very much.
Questions, members? Discussion? All right. Well, then, thank you, Mr. Lundell. Let me get myself together here. So Representative Faust moves adoption of the A14 amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you. We now have the A21, I believe.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the H1151A21 and ask for a roll call.
Representative Erickson moves adoption of the A21 amendment and requests a roll call. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. On page 12, line 9, after the word exam, I think it's important that we clarify the word attainment, which in just the text it is now, it seems to be vague and I think needs clarification. Furthermore, the definition of attainment that I'm using in this amendment is the one that is set down by the ACT. As you know, the ACT sets scores at certain places, and then that score more or less indicates to the test taker and to the college that a student has at a 75% or higher probability of earning at least a C in a corresponding college course for credit.
Very well. Discussion, members. Representative Brenner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, the first and simplest thing I'd say, first of all, I'd ask you not to support this amendment, but the first thing I'd say is let the task force do its work. We have quite an expansive group of people coming together to talk about career pathways and technical education and how they relate to the alignment between secondary and post-secondary. And we are talking about nationally normed tests, and so there is there's certainly standards involved, but I would say we need to let these people come together and discuss whether it's appropriate to create this definition in this context. The language we have here actually came from Minsky and six assessment experts working together, and they wanted to keep it broad until that task force had a chance to work out some of this discussion, and so I would just ask you to please let that process move forward.
Very well. Discussion?
Well, Mr. Chair, and Representative Reinert, I appreciate that. But once we get into conference committee, and I don't know what the Senate has been doing, so I don't know if they're taking exactly the same path, but it seems to me that for anyone who is reading our proposal and who sees the word attainment, even though we hope that there will be task force discussion about it, and you say Minsky wants it that way as well, to leave a vague word like attainment in a proposal, I think is going to be something that is going to be probably questioned by our constituency. So for that reason, I would really like to have support for the amendment.
All right. A roll call being called for. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani?
No.
Vice Chair Beiner?
No.
Volunteer Philippe Erickson?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yep.
Barrett?
Yes.
Benson?
No.
Bly?
No.
Dabney?
No.
Roger Erickson?
No.
Faust?
No.
Isaacson? Is excused. Keel?
Yes.
Prisha?
Yes.
Leidiger?
He's
excused. Marquardt?
No.
He's in another committee. Isn't he, like, yeah.
Morgan?
No.
Nornes?
Yes.
Sawatsky?
No.
Erdahl? Is currently excused. Wills?
Yes.
And Yaruso? Is currently excused.
Why don't you go back again and make sure whoever has been excused get another chance.
Isaacson? Excused. Leidiger? Excused. Representative Earl?
I think he's excused. Out in the hall doing his homework.
And Representative Yaruso?
Stay with her.
Probably
excused. All right. What's your vote? Okay, very well. On a vote of 7 ayes and 10 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Members, we have the A24 amendment.
That's mine, Mr. Chair, so I would move the H1151A26 amendment.
A24 amendment? Or 26?
26 is fine.
All right, so let's do A26 amendment. Representative Erickson moves adoption of the 826 amendment. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This would allow for the taking of the ASVAB for the on page 10. Let me get there. In regard to the colleges, let's see, line 30. Yes, a college admission assessment consistent, and that supports career and college readiness. As I think many of you know, the ASVAB, which is the military aptitude test, is used widely by our high schools, and I just thought it would be another option. In fact, it's interesting, at the end of last session, Senator Wigger and I introduced a bill that would have allowed the ASVAB to be used more frequently than it already is in our schools to give direction to college and career readiness. So with that said, Mr. Chair, I ask for your support.
Wonderful. Representative Breiter.
Mr. Chair, while I'm happy to have the opportunity to agree with Representative Erickson on a potential collaborative solution here, I don't see any reason not to take this. I mean, I'd be glad to hear if there's anyone else who knows something I don't, but it seems to me to be of equal standard to the assessment, you know, we're putting in place, and I would be happy to support it.
Representative Solotsky.
Mr. Chair, did you say that you did work on it last year? But it didn't prevail, or what happened that it wasn't successful?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Sawatsky. At the end of a session last year, Senator Wigger and I were approached by the ASVAB organization, by those who go to school, to the high schools, and promote the use of this. And Senator Wigger was so impressed with the presentation that he had language drafted so that we could have this this year on the docket, and I did introduce it. I don't think he did, but it was based on the fact that he found it to be just an excellent asset for determining the direction that our students should be taking, and so I thought this would work well with Representative Breinert's approach.
Okay, the only question I have is, what does ASVAB stand for? I'm thinking Armed Services.
Yes.
I can get that far, but I'm lost after that. Does anyone know what the
vocational
aptitude?
Battery. Yes.
Sounds like military language. So very well. There seems to be agreement around the table on this. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Very well. Now we do have the 824 amendment. We jumped over there. Is anyone offering that?
That's mine, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson moves adoption of the 824 amendment. Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair, the 824 amendment would, it's lost in my pile here, but I know what it does. It would reinstate the report card. Thank you. On page 21, I'm deleting the new language, reinstating the stricken language, and all those lines, by the way, on page 21, use the phrase reports, and I want to revert to report card. And then in line 20, I make sure that after report card, that we add the phrase in an easy-to-read, accurate format, and then delete the verb reflect. It's not really reflects, it's reflect, I believe, in the original. And with that, I ask for your support. I think it's really important, by the way, that we have a report card rather than just reports. That happens to be what the statute recommends, and I'm not sure why the department has moved away from that, which we enacted several years ago when we began assessments.
Thank you. Representative Breiter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'd actually like to have the department come down and speak to this, because we did proceed with this language because the department had, in fact, moved away from, on its website, from organizing the information in the report card format, and so we were just attempting to be consistent with the practice. So I'd like to have the department address that.
Okay.
Welcome back, Mr. McHenry.
Mr. Chair, members, Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. I've also brought up Jennifer Dugan, who is our assessment director, and among other things. I think one of the issues on this, as we were reviewing it, the reason we had it switched to, or with the language being reports, okay, is how the data is compiled. We do have it in an easy-to-read format for students and for parents. However, I was going to, I brought Ms. Dugan up here to get into a little bit more details of how that information is compiled.
Ms. Dugan, welcome.
Hi, Jennifer Dugan, Assessment Director at MDE. And the format or the presentation of the information is tailored to the interaction with the user. So the user can go in and decide what information they are looking for, if they're looking for a math test or if they're looking for a special education test instead of the general education assessment. And so rather than a single snapshot static PDF that that may not be exactly what that user is looking for, instead the data center, which provides the same information, it provides that user access to all of the data. So it's presented in technologically appropriate ways now.
Representative Brenner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you say it's as easy for a parent to access a full set of information around the performance of their child's particular school under the new system as it was under the former system?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you, Chair. In my opinion, yes. Of course, I'm familiar with the data center. I think one of the pieces that is really nice about the data center is that a user can go in and on the same screen look at this. Say I was a parent at a particular school, I can look at the performance of that particular school, and right next to it, I can pull up information and compare it to a neighboring school, and there's a way for the parent to indicate compare to schools like me instead of a static PDF where they're having to guess, well, my friend's kids go to this other school. So it's more interactive in that way, so if that helps.
Representative Erickson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Dugan, you know, I know that you're collecting the data and making it available for parents and others, including teachers, of course, but it seems to me you're still maintaining the format, more or less, of the report card, even though I know you've changed the website considerably since Commissioner Segrin left. But it seems to me that the intent of this legislative body was to make sure that parents could look at this website and see it more as a report card about a school or a district, because that's what they're used to, is a report card that comes home with their children, not reports. So, you know, I think for the sake of parents, we still want to maintain that report card format and then report this data. And I'm sure there's a way that if you've redesigned, that we can reinstate that, because performance is what parents are looking for, whether it's of their school or their child's district. And I think that, you know, what I find, what parents tell me is the way the department has organized data now is difficult. And I think Representative Dabney even had this experience when we went through this. It's difficult to follow and to assess as an individual what actually is being stated by the department using the information that comes from the district. So I don't like the fact that we're moving to reports rather than a report card or report cards.
Members, we have a couple of folks in the audience that have wished to speak on this issue, and so I'm going to ask them to come forward. Mr. Heller and Ms. Ciccone, we'll start with Mr. Heller.
Thank you again, Chair, and members of this committee again. I believe in 2009 or 10, I believe, Minnesota aligned their accountability assessment, which is sometimes called the MCA, to Lexile metric, which is a reading level called text difficulty. As we know, Minnesota statute currently says every child will read well by the end of third grade. I'm not sure what well means. But then we get into a term called easy to read. Thanks to Deaf-Blind Hard of Hearing 2009, it passed language that requires, again, all websites to be fully accessible, with the exemption of the governors and this capital, who are looking at documents fully accessible. With a reader, which is text-to-speech, which you'll find the blind and print disabled and the higher education opportunity like the 2008. Those are only two handicapped learners mentioned in there. So I guess I'm asking a big question for the department as I continue to analyze their documents on their website, which many of the, if not all the documents, are fairly compliant to the new rules regarding 508 and 211 accessibility in a reader protectable PDF format. It's accessible, so the second part of this question is, how do they decide the text difficulty or reading level of the materials for the lifetime learners, so myself and men as well? Is it adaptive? Since Minnesota has created, I believe you'll find in their manuals, bands of learners using Lexile, again, percent of frequency of vocabulary and length of a sentence, that works very well in informational text, as noted by NAEP. So the question is to the department, if they're willing to answer that, do they set a reading bar on text difficulty with their manuals, their interactive graphs? It's my understanding, since Minnesota believes that Lexile is a good metric to use on their assessment system because we're having kids open a higher education based on their independent reading level, which I'm an independent learner myself. What independent reading level are they deciding for lifetime learners regarding their manuals, et cetera, and all their documents on their website? Thank you for this time to ask that question if someone chooses to do so.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Appreciate it. Ms. Ciccone.
Mary Ciccone, Parents United for Public Schools. Mr. Chair, members, while the department was changing over its website and specifically to the reports, they asked us in, PTA was there as well, we brought several parents, and they, over a series of time, they worked with us on this system and kept asking and tweaking the system to see if it was something that they thought was usable. So I do know they vetted it with groups of parents. The one thing we heard most was that parents liked the comparability piece, that they could put their school up and compare it with multiple schools, and that was something they couldn't get with a static report card. So that was what was said at the time while the MDE was developing it.
Thank you, Ms. Ciccone. It's helpful information. Members, further discussion? Mr. Bartholomew, please join us.
Mr. Chair, members, Jim Bartholomew, Minnesota Business Partnership, and I really hesitate to get into this because I do appreciate the work the department has done on their website. So I think the point that Representative Erickson is trying to make is when the department had a report card option on their website, it allowed you two options. One is you could go into the interactive portions, which you now have access to, but it also gave you the option of clicking on the report card, which would print off a summary, the summary data for your district in a complete fashion. So right now on the report card, you'd have to pick each interactive, and I think there are eight of them maybe, and print off each of those pages, and it's not very quick or easy, and in the old fashion, you just click report card and the whole thing would come out. So it, from a user's perspective, it was much more easier at that point in time, but thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'd like a roll call.
Representative Erickson requests a roll call. Representative Brenner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I really do appreciate the discussion, and I was a strong advocate for the report card in its original form because, you know, it contained much of the work we did around the growth model, and that data was easy to read. On the other hand, now the department has so much data available to us that I don't know if they went back to the old report card, how we would access the additional information. So, you know, I use your judgment. I'm going to stay with the department's current reporting process and argue for the language in the bill, but I would also be willing to work with Representative Erickson in the future to see if we could accommodate both points of view.
Is there anything the department wishes to add to this discussion before we vote? Mrs. Hermanson?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Rose Hermanson with the Assistant Commissioner at the Department. The two items that were discussed here may be related. We have a very comprehensive program going on about accessibility of all documents on a website. And what I don't know is whether those report cards were a static document or accessible. We are under some mandate to make sure that all of our documents are accessible. And what that has done within the agency and within the department, we have to be very careful about what we post on the website to make sure that it is accessible, and that many times does include pictures, graphs, and things like that. So I'm not sure if it's related. However, we do know that the stuff that we are putting on the website, we are in every way attempting to make them accessible to all individuals.
Mr. McHenry?
And Mr. Chair, members, just to piggyback on that, I think the one of the ideas is that one of the things we've been hearing is that we do have a lot of information, and I think that's one of the things that we've tried to do is make sure that we could put that out in an understandable manner that parents, teachers, and students could use. We have received we've received national recognition on this website and specifically on this data center for how the data is presented in an easy to use manner. One of the things we have heard are people that have been used to the old way of doing things in the older system have found that changing over to a different way of doing that where you can just pull up a school and compare it to a specific school is maybe a different path than what has been used in the past. That's some of the feedback we have received. Our website has, we have received, the increase in traffic has gone through the roof since we've changed over to this data center. And we've received, you know, we have, within the Capitol, we have heard folks that say it's a little bit more difficult to get data. But what we've heard from parents and from schools is nothing but thanks for changing over to that system.
And very quickly, I don't want to belabor this, but so you heard Mr. Heller's testimony earlier. Can you perhaps share a few words about how the department may or may not be accommodating those kind of
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, specifically addressing his concern, we have, like I said, an ongoing major project going on in the department to make sure that everything is accessible for all disabled individuals. And I'm not sure about the specific type of programming he was talking about. I would need to check on that. But clearly our staff, and a little bit to their frustration, they're being told you can't produce documents in this format because we cannot make them accessible. And we have a very detailed and staff training going on to assure that all of the public can access our data and our information. And so I just wanted to assure the committee that we are addressing that concern.
Very well. Thank you. Representative Erickson moves the A24 amendment and has requested a roll call. The clerk will take the roll.
Follow my lead.
Representative Mariani?
No.
Representative Reinert?
No.
Representative Erickson?
Yes.
Anderson?
Yes.
Barrett?
Yes.
Benson?
No.
Bly?
No.
Dabney?
No.
Roger Erickson?
No.
Faust?
No.
Isaacson?
Nope.
Keel?
Yes.
Krisha?
Yes.
Heidegger? Is excused. Marquardt?
No.
Morgan?
No.
Nornes?
Yes.
Sawatsky?
No.
Erdahl?
Yes.
Wills?
Yes.
And Yuriso?
No.
Representative Leidiger? Excused?
No.
Members, on a vote of 8 ayes and 12 nays, the motion does not prevail.
We're doing worse. Oh, yeah.
All right. did the 26th, so good. Oh, so we're here. We're not doing that one, right? No. All right, so the department probably needs to kind of park up front here a little bit. We've got several amendments, the 829 amendment.
Matters.
And I'll move the 829 amendment and ask the department to explain it for us.
Who is this one?
Bless you.
Thank you.
Mr. McHenry.
Mr. Chair, members, Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. With me up front, our Director of Charter Schools, Cindy Murphy. This, I'm going to actually have her, I'm going to turn it over to her to
Ms.
go
Murphy,
through this.
Welcome
this is a technical
back.
Update.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. It's a pleasure to be here. This amendment contains two provisions. The first one indicates that on page 57, line 22, the word grades is reinstated. That was simply an error in the department's initial bill. We definitely need to ensure that authorizers do submit a supplemental affidavit when they want to expand a charter school beyond the footprint that it was originally approved for. So that would include both sites and grades. That was simply an error. Our second amendment is response to language introduced to change the way a charter school transfers between authorizers. And information is in the amendment, D3, that provides for a somewhat different process. We aren't necessarily concerned overall with the change, but we do want to see a little bit more time provided for with the initial review by the commissioner. And so instead of 15 business days for the initial review, we're simply asking that that be extended to 30 business days. And that time period is consistent with the time allotted for the commissioner's review of supplemental affidavits. Thank you.
Very well. Any questions, discussion? If not, all in favor of the 829 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. And we have the 830 amendment. And I will move the 830 amendment. And Mr. McHenry.
Mr. Chair, members, this is following up from the conversation the other night dealing the conversation we had around the extension for EL from 5 to 7 years. We went back to the department and put a little bit of work in to bring forward a suggestion. I'm going to say right off the bat, we don't know if this is completely finalized. We wanted to bring this up for your consideration and continue to work on it. The idea behind this amendment was to connect it with the WEDA standards for English learners. Through those standards that have been adopted, there is a measurement of how students are learning English in order to learn in specific language. Learn the specific language in specific academic areas. Through the WEDA standards, students do take the access to determine if they are proficient in English for those specific subjects. So our suggestion, and again, this was in between committees, we were trying to make the 6 o'clock deadline, is what we were trying to attempt was to include the same language, let me see this here. It's been changed a little bit since how we sent that over, but what we wanted to do is make sure that the language from the WIDA standards and what WIDA uses for English learners was connected to our statute for English learners.
Thank you, Mr. McHenry. I appreciate the department's efforts on this. Members, especially Representative Erickson, Sandra, and Representative Marquardt, this is partly instigated by my desire to attach some outcomes language. The department is, the governor's asked for new expenditures related to expanding out eligibility to 7 years for EL students. I actually would like to work on this a little bit more, and I know that takes us outside of the policy arena that Representative Dabney said we should do here, but I think we have a good hook here in sending a good message from this committee forward to your committee that if you act proactively or positively on the governor's request, that our expectation is to tie student outcomes, to those requests. And so I probably will continue to work on this between now and when we move the bill in finance. Any questions, members? If not, all in favor of the A30 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. We do have the A31 amendment. I had not, I had overseen it. Is anyone going to move the A31?
Mr. Chair, I move the A31.
Representative Erickson moves adoption of the A31 amendment. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment would place the MMR in statute. It is, as you know, the waiver it's not the stipulation of the waiver. It is what Minnesota was it's what Minnesota did to fulfill the waiver.
Right.
So I think because we still are going to be dealing with this multiple rating system, that we will have less confusion if we have it in statute. It is a tool. It is something that many of us stakeholders put together. It was reviewed by a panel. It is fair and accurate. It's not based on one test. It shows growth over time. I think it balances out. And for those reasons and more, I think it's important that we place this in statute, just as we did the NCLB. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Biner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I would argue against putting the MMR in statute. It is a waiver, and it's 2 years now, and we may get a third year. We don't know if we will. And we're moving to a broader assessment frame for a longer term anyway. And I'm not certain if we had put this through the legislative process, if we would have ended up with the same formula that came, that the waiver embodies, particularly the growth model. It's different than the growth model that we have in statute. So I'm not willing to give statutory authority to the waiver. The department may want to testify on that, but that's my point of view, and I would argue against the amendment.
Any chance the department would wish to comment on this? I leave it to the department.
Mr. Chair, members, Kevin McHenry, Department of Education. We appreciate the thought in this amendment and appreciate the comments Representative Breinert has made on this. Obviously, we are proud of the waiver, and we think this is a great step forward for Minnesota. Looking at this language, however, there was a couple of concerns we were looking at and trying to clarify as far as how growth was calculated under statute and how it's been calculated under the MMR and how it's done in this bill. We no longer require school improvement plans for districts that do not make AYP for two consecutive years. We do have the priority in the focus schools. And we also have a difference in the graduation rate here. So I think this is something that there were a couple questions, I think, that had been raised that we weren't completely clear on. So at this time, I'm not saying at this time, this is something I think we feel we need to have a little bit more chance to look at the amendment.
Very well. Further discussion? Representative Breiner?
Just real quickly to the department, I was in no manner trying to impugn the value of the MMR for Minnesota. I think it's a much better approach than the model we were operating under in terms of cut scores and proficiency measures. So I think it gives us a broader picture. I just don't think it's wise to put it in statute because it is a federal waiver, and we've tried to differentiate the state accountability system from the federal all the way along. So,
thank you. Further discussion? Representative Erickson? Very well. Representative Erickson moves adoption of the 831 amendment. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion does not prevail. I think we're ready to take up the A5 amendment. Representative Erdahl? Representative Erdahl moves adoption of the A5 amendment.
As amended. Representative Russo will take over at this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess the... Right. I would like to do is offer an oral amendment to the A5. There we go. And I can explain that.
Why don't we have Ms. Larson read the oral amendment?
Yes. Okay. So the essence of it, of the oral amendment, is to do a delete all on the A5, and then, as Ms. Larson can, either of us could read it. Would you?
All right, Ms. Larson.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, members, as I understand it, this is Representative Erdahl's amendment to Representative Yaruso's language that is in lieu of the A5 amendment. So what Representative Erdahl is proposing to do is to amend the language that is currently in the DE3 to incorporate the substance of the differences between Representative Yaruso's proposal and Representative Erdahl's proposal in terms of a compromise.
Very well.
Mr. Chairman, I couldn't have said that better myself.
All right. We still need the language before us, though.
Okay.
So what is the language?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members, it's on several pages in the H1151 DE3 amendment, beginning on page 25. On page 25, line 27, delete A and insert up to 3. And delete license and insert licenses.
Is that it?
No.
Oh, why don't you continue, Ms. Larson? I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, members, continuing with the H1151 DE3 amendment, on page 28, line 8, delete A and insert up to 3. And on page 28, line 9, delete license and insert licenses. On page 28, line 23, delete the second comma and 1 year. On page 28, line 32, delete obtained A and insert has been issued 3. And delete license and insert licenses. On page 28, line 33, delete 1 year and delete the licensee colon. And on page 28, delete lines 34 to 36. Continuing on the H1151DE3 on page 29, delete line 1. And on page 29, line 2, delete parens 3 parens. And lastly, Mr. Chairman, on page 31 of the H1151DE3, on page 31, line 3, delete A and insert up to 3. And delete license and insert licenses.
Okay, is that it? Members, are we clear? Is there anything that we need to repeat here?
Mr. Chairman?
Rep. Serrato.
If I could say that this makes some significant changes that, I wanted made, yet addresses the situation of the Dan Devines of the world and the 1,500 to 2,000 people who are like him out there. Also provides a framework into the future to make sure that these folks who have these problems are taken care of. And so when great minds get together to work on a problem, you can reach a solution. So thank you to Ms. Larson and Ms. Urasso for being the great minds to work this out.
Well, thank you, Representative, for being also another one of those great minds. I want to make sure procedurally we're doing this correct. We're moving a oral amendment to the DE3. We did move the A5 again. Why don't you withdraw your A5 amendment?
All right, I will withdraw the A5 amendment.
Mr. Erdahl withdraws the A5 amendment and then offers the oral amendment that was just stated on the record by
right.
Ms. Larson, and that we all dutifully, accurately marked up on our DE3 comments.
I will move the oral amendment as just given us by Ms. Larson.
Wonderful. So we have the Erdahl oral amendment before us. All right. Discussion, Representative Russo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Erdahl and I are in complete agreement about what the goals of this are. And his oral amendment helps pick up a group of people that had been unintentionally neglected in the original wording. There are people who currently may not be hired by a district, maybe subbing or something like that, who need to have their license issues cleared up too. So this takes care of that group of people. And I'm in absolute agreement with this. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, if Representative Erdahl, how many temporary one-year licenses could I get under your oral amendment?
Representative Erdahl.
I don't think there is a limit, Mr. Chairman, Ms. Dabney. Representative Dabney, I don't think there's a limit. There is a task force that is in this bill now, and I'm assuming that there are going to be some recommendations from that that would affect this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Because the sunset for the requirement to pass the test exists, if nothing else happens, there will no longer need to be the need to issue the temporary licenses, so that there is a kind of feet to the fire requirement here, that the problem is either cleared up or the problem will go away. And so there will not be the need, the infinite need for temporary licenses if either nothing is done, you know, or it'll be revisited after the task force comes back with recommendations. So one of those two things will happen.
And Representative Russo, certainly this lone legislator's intent that by the time we're done in May, we're going to have a very strong message that this task force will, in fact, bring us back a permanent solution. Very well. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor of the Erdahl oral amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails. All right. Are there any amendments? I had to pause there for a second. So it's like, well,
thank you for the pause.
That was a close call. Right. Any further amendments that I've missed, or I know some were not offered. Okay, very well. Any closing comments or thoughts? I suppose I should be offering that as the author of the bill.
So tomorrow, this other one?
Members, we've been informed that if this bill is successful here and we move it forward, that the K-12 Finance Committee will hear it on the 21st, next Thursday. And I would certainly encourage members of this committee who are not on that committee to attend and obviously speak to your colleagues on that committee. I think we have a really good bill here, members, and I think it's a testament to your willingness to ask tough questions, have very good and open and honest conversations with one another, and sort of shove and push and explore. But you've done that with a high level of professionalism and good stewardship of this committee and of this body, and I commend you for that. I will work awfully hard to champion the provisions of this bill as it moves forward through K-12 finance and beyond. There are already some emerging differences with what seems to be coming out of the Senate, and it would be my intent that the House positions prevail at every instance. So you have my word on that. So with no further discussion then, I renew my motion that the H1, or rather the House File 1151 as amended, be recommended to pass and forwarded to the committee on K-12 finance. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
No.
Motion prevails. Members, thank you so much. All right, so here's the deal. And you can totally love our committee administrator. I'm going to say it was his call. It's his call that we don't need to meet tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, that's worth something. I leave it, to your imagination. We will meet next week. We will take up the bill that we were going to hear tomorrow, sometime next week. Stay posted. We will slowly kind of wind down the work of this committee. We will attempt to move some bills that the Senate did meet its first deadline, so there's still formal work that needs to be done in that respect, and stay tuned. I'm hoping to have one or two informational hearings as well before the end of session. So, members, I was going to say good night, but I'll see you all in about an hour on the floor. So, this committee stands adjourned.